Mr. Chairman, all of them are on the calendar. The thumb drive is kind of like background supporting material.
Sure.
So,
and you have Chapter 17 also listed in a separate, I thought. Or
that's correct. That's
okay.
Correct.
I just wanted to.
So on the calendar, I think the governor's office will have two items. One is their budget, and the second one is a request of every agency to provide their 600 and 900 series contracts.
Exactly. Okay. Very good. Well, Carrie, welcome back, and go ahead. We look forward to take us through Agency 1.
Okay. I don't know what would be the best way to do that. If you turn to page 8 of the budget, it would list kind of in summary form all of the exception requests out of the governor's budget and out of the Office of Homeland Security onto page 9. And the rest of the budget, the standard budget, also refers to the page number that that particular item can be found on. And if it's okay with you, I might just get through it like that.
Yeah, you know, usually we just start and we flip through and we start and you just take us through.
Great.
Each division, yeah. But you, I'm just getting up to speed here. I see page 8.
Yeah, you see the sort of the summary of the, all the exception requests there.
Okay.
So if that, I think many of these are recurring year after year, and
sure.
I don't know that they'll inspire a lot of questions.
I think we'll take us through. They'll just go through each division. It flips pretty quickly, and then if there are members have questions about a specific thing, we can certainly bring it up.
Okay. So you want to go through the budget division by division?
I do. I think.
Okay.
We flip through. Many of them will be very quick.
Great. Then we'll start. I think on page 12. I didn't have my budget marked, so I apologize if we're a little.
No, that's fine. We're all kind of knocking the dust off around here.
Okay.
I got my right finger on this iPad trying to get it to work
so
right.
Page 12, where I see the 125th anniversary. So here in 2015, Wyoming's going to celebrate its 125th anniversary. I think historically the legislature has funded some events for that, and they funded them out of the governor's office. I don't know that it would be quite the degree of celebration that it would be on the 100th, but you can see that we've asked for $25,000 to cover any kinds of expenses that would be associated with celebrations for Wyoming's 125th anniversary.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, let's start up with Section 3. You know, let's start, like, I think what we're saying, start right there, Section 2, standard budget, boom.
Go right across.
Then go into Section 3, the expanded. So start on page 12, I think is what we're saying.
Start on page 12.
That's where I went to page 12.
Yeah, okay, I just got to catch up with the. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I just skipped down a page, Mr. Chairman. On page 12, we have transition expenses. Of course, next year is an election year, and in the event that there is a change in administration, I think this body has previously provided money for the transition, and so this exception request was to anticipate any change in administration that would occur as a result of the election.
You know, Mr. Kocher,
yeah.
That's a lot higher than it's been in the past. Is there any reason? I think we had 50,000. I think we had 50,000 for when Governor Meade came in is what we had in the budget. Now we're 200. Is there any reason why we've gone up that much?
I didn't think there was maybe a particular reason. I think part of the transition expenses that Governor Friedenthal, I think, actually provided more than $50,000 in transition expenses to Governor Meade. Senator, I think that he did that out of his vacancy savings. And we're told that it cost him about the same as what he generously gave to Governor Meade. That was a very friendly transition. And so there wasn't any problem, I understand, and again, have not experienced it, but if the transition is less friendly, that there can be problems associated with that. But I think that was just a number that we picked based on was estimated to be the actual cost of putting a transition team in place and then carrying them over.
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, it really was $50,000 is what was in the budget for when Governor Meade came in, with $10,000 for agency director, so it was $60,000. and now we've gone to 200, and I'm just wondering, and maybe if you know the actual expenses, we could see why. You don't need to do that now, but it seems to me that we just spent way more than we needed to there.
Just to be clear, Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure I answered that well, is that that more than 50 was expended. Governor Friedenthal used some of his 900 series and some of his vacancy savings to expend more than the 50,000 to aid with the transition. So I think it was based on actual expenditures rather than the budgeted amount, but I'll go double check that.
I guess Mr. Co-Chair just chose what they actually were, and that'll help us. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, then on page 13, the anniversary planning right there underneath that we already talked about. Okay, and then right below the anniversary funding, $12,974 for computer replacement. That's, a depreciation kind of an expense. Computers are on a life cycle. Varies, I think, somewhat between agencies, but in the governor's office every 4 years. So that's the ETS estimate for the hardware replacement of the computers in the governor's office. Okay. So then next on page 16 is the money for the deep water ports. This was money that was put in by the legislature last biennium, and the governor's office has asked not only for a carryover of the amount that's remaining in that account, which is about $48,000, but an appropriation of the $100,000. Currently, the work that's been done on the deep water ports is the governor's gone to Canada, where they have an operational deep water port, and then there's two potential deep water ports in the state of Washington. So those are currently out for their EIS, which in Washington is a little different because they have both a state EIS process as well as one by the federal government. And so the Attorney General has weighed into both of those. We've been making comments on those deep water ports. We have funded a legislative trip out there to talk to folks about the value of deep water ports. And then we have the work that we're doing up in Canada. So while this last biennium that money wasn't used, and I'm hesitate to say they would all be used, it seems like it's going for an important purpose, and that the activity on that has been picked up.
Okay. Questions? And this has been actually this would be the third biennium, I think, that we've had this in here moving forward. It's okay. Very good. Mm-hmm. Questions?
Okay. Next page, Brent. Mm-hmm. So the next exception request is on page 20. That's also a depreciation expense for computers. The governor's office is actually broken up into two parts. The administrative side of the office and the policy side of the office, which is why you see that request broken into two parts.
Mr. Co-Chair, if you're on page 20 or 21, the policy office is removing 900 series, 100 series, position 18. What position is that? And then I assume that the salary is 128. Could you explain a little bit of that to me, please?
This is Kathy Lynn. So what happened here, Mr. Chairman, was that there was a position in Homeland Security that was transferred to the governor's office. So Homeland Security, I don't know how y'all think of it, but it's really technically a part of the governor's office. So that would be a position in the governor's office budget, but it really operates independently to some degree, almost like a separate agency. So they had an excess position, so we needed an administrative assistant over in the policy office. We brought that position over. In Homeland Security, it was funded with a federal fund, and so we had, so that money is being, done away with or asked the authority to spend that money is being reduced out of Homeland Security. And so we've used 900 series money to fund the general fund portion of this position. It's now 100% generally funded position as an administrative assistant in the policy office.
So, Mr. Kocher, this is a new position then, correct, since it's going to show up as a general fund position?
No, it's an existing position. It's an existing.
But it's just funded by general funds.
Right, it's a change in funding source from federal funds to general funds.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, if I could just add something
to
that.
Go ahead, Brett.
You may note also specifically it's not a request for a new general fund. That general fund would come up within the existing general fund in the policy office budget.
Okay.
Next one, Brett. So the next exception budget request would be on page 29. It would be an exception request for liquid natural gas. And, again, that has been in special projects. So we're just asking for that to be reappropriated. And we are asking for the money that is left in that particular budget to remain there. And so from the last appropriation of $50,000, there's remaining left in that account $17,989.
Co-chair, the LNG exports is really picking back up again. And so has the governor scheduled some, what is this used for him to analyze what's going on or to actually go to some of the ports or? What are we doing? Is Sean going
out?
Yeah,
I'll let Sean address that, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sean Reese, Governor Mead's Policy Director. The governor has weighed in with the Department of Energy asking for their expedited review of and approval of LNG export facilities on the West Coast. Earlier this year, the Department of Energy released an economic study to show that there would not be economic ramifications that would reverberate across the country should exports of natural gas increase and then natural gas prices rise. There had been some concern from members of the petrochemical industry that that would be the case. So after that report, the governors weighed into the Department of Energy to expedite their approval of those. So that's what's happening on the export side. We're particularly closely tracking the proposal at Coos Bay, which would affect Wyoming natural gas. In addition, the governor is exploring opportunities for increased use of liquid natural gas here in the state of Wyoming for high horsepower operations, including heavy equipment used by the coal and Trona industries to convert to LNG. We're using this funding to look at where facilities for LNG liquefaction and storage could best be placed to help those industries reduce their diesel costs and use more Wyoming liquid natural gas. We think that it would also have, depending on where they're sited, some great implications for the Bakken development and LNG operations for or access to LNG for those markets.
How much is left in there from that? You said I didn't get it typed down.
17,000.
There's 17,000.
Almost 18,000.
Is any, you know, when we had this thought and there was part of the when that the tar sands pipeline was put on hold and maybe thoughts of pipelines through Wyoming and how has there been any movement on any of that or?
Mr. Chairman, we have looked at the Keystone line and it is not currently routed through the state of Wyoming, although we think that there are benefits for Wyoming once that is finally approved. But it's far along in its siting process and unfortunately it's not coming through the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Stubbs.
Mr. Chairman, in the explanation of the request, it refers to some studies that are being done. Are those being in-house or university, or are we having third parties do these studies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, these studies are actually being co-sponsored by the Governor's Office and the Wyoming Business Council. Rob Herless, the Governor's Energy Strategy Advisor, is key to this, so we do believe we have close coordination with the School of Energy Resources.
Okay. Okay, continue on.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, the next, you can just stay here, Sean. The next exception request will be on page 85.
Oh, hold a second, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, go ahead.
I got a question on a standard budget for the tribal liaison. And you know, in the past, it used to be that there was a match with the tribes. They would pay half. We would pay half. There was some accountability as to where they officed and some information going back and forth with the governor's office. My question is, what's the status of that? Who monitors? Who do these people really work for? Who are they held accountable to? What do they do? I mean, I know Sarah's working for the Shoshone, and she's a good, sharp lady, but how is that set up so as to who they report to? What are their, do they have any objectives, goals, what they're supposed to take care of? What's their business function?
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And so ever since the beginning of Governor Mead's administration, I think it maybe was just in the year prior to that, but I'm not exactly sure, there was a time in which the tribal liaisons were housed in the governor's office and paid for in that manner, and there was kind of some, it was constructed differently. That was before Governor Mead came to office, so I don't know exactly how that was constructed. But at some point in time, that changed to a contract mechanism. And so each tribe, the Shoshone and the Arapaho, essentially have a budgeted amount of $100,000 a year, actually, so $200,000 a biennium for the tribal liaison services. Each tribe picks their own liaison, and then the contract that the governor's office has is with the business council, not with the individual liaison member. And the business council submits monthly invoices, reimbursement for travel, reimbursement for time. They actually pay their liaison, and they actually direct more or less the work of the liaison between the state and the tribe. The payment is based on certain deliverables. There has to be a billing and some time spent, and particularly our office has two people, not 100% time, but closely associated with working with the Shoshone and the Arapaho tribes. And so when we try to set up a quarterly meeting with them and then have meetings in the middle, and they work with those tribal liaisons, but also directly with the business council in trying to make sure that we maintain an awareness of what's going on and issues confronting the tribes in total, but also each tribe individually, because sometimes those vary. I will tell you that there's some difficulty because the billings aren't always timely, and then there's sometimes some need to back up and make sure that the billings are properly accounted for. But the biggest problem comes in when, if you don't get a billing for 6-8 months, then you don't really realize how much of the money is available or not available for them. That's the system that was in place when the governor came into office, and that's the system that we keep trying to refine and make sure that there's deliverables in those contracts, and that we're also making sure that we are, really working hard to make sure that those relationships and the issues that would parallel between the governor's office or the state of Wyoming and the tribes are addressed.
Mr. Co-Chair, I'm not too concerned about how it gets paid or those kind of things, but one of the concerns I have is there are issues where the governor, the executive branch, the legislative branch may differ with the tribal because of sovereignty or whatever, and I'm concerned that we may be paying some of this money may go to them to support the tribal position. I don't want us to get into that kind of a situation. So is there some way, I mean, do you give them some direction as to, are they working on water? Are they, I mean, is it just kind of they do whatever they want to do and they send you a bill and we move forward? Is there any kind of oversight? And it's kind of a hard situation. I understand that, but I just want to be sure that there's some, it's our money, it's the state dollars, and we need, I think there's a need for those people to be there, but how do we manage their time and what they do and the issues they're involved in?
Well, it's a contractual, sorry, Mr. Chairman, it's a contractual relationship where we put the statutory objectives of the tribal liaison in the statute. That allows a lot of flexibility on their part to identify issues that they're in, you know, because it's a two-way street, is the liaison from them to us also. And so I don't know that we actually identify issues that they work on. I would tell you that most of the money goes to salary of the actual tribal liaison, in that they submit a billing, but that we don't direct what it is that they are working on, what they think is an issue that needs to be worked on. So that maybe answers your question in the negative. I mean, maybe we don't have a lot, don't feel like we have a lot of control over what it is that they choose as an issue.
Well, and we'll get on with this, Mr. Chairman. Maybe it's just a thought. And we could do it if in the legislature from, you know, in a budget series or some kind of a footnote. I don't know that the governor should tell them what they should do, but we should be sure and have them tell us what they're up to and what they're doing. So maybe a request from them when they submit the bill, what have you been working on?
And we do ask for that, Mr. Chairman.
You do? So you could present that to us, some of the things they've been working on?
We could within, again, there's some differences in how often and thoroughly that gets answered, but yes, we could present what we have.
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay. Moving on. Next.
85, I think, was the next exception request, which is the Federal Natural Resource Policy Account Fund. And that is money that is used to work with page 85. So those funds are used to assist counties and local governments with natural resources issue, building capacity at that level, and working with the Attorney General's office on different lawsuits that have to do with endangered species and those kinds of things. So the money is actually given out more in the form of grants. It's worked mostly out of our office by the governor's policy advisor, Jeremiah Riemann, who has a close relationship with counties, and I think it's been really successful as far as building their expertise and transferring that money, and it's different monies that go to the Attorney General's account. I have, I think, a 7 or 8 page list of the different kinds of grants that have been given out in order to make sure that the best use of the money's gone on. In many situations, both municipalities and counties do matching funds from the local level as they work on these issues that are important to them. And so really kind of works, make sure that the money really gets some traction and some ability. Currently in that account, the money does not revert, it just continues to build. And so in addition to the exception request appropriation of $1 million, currently in that account there's about $1.3 million. Some of that's obligated, and before I got here I didn't get that amount. Do you know that amount, Sean?
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid I don't have that number at the ready, but we can pull that together.
Yes. So we got 1.3 minus the obligated funds plus $1 million, so we'll end up with $2 million and change, more or less.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, that'd be correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I want to back up. We were at the tribal liaisons, and that was on what, page 22 or?
Yeah, it's a part of the standard budget, I think, Mr. Chairman. So probably.
Page 33.
You know, and I think what we'd like to do, and members, and I'd like us just to flip really through page by page. And if you just tell us, hey, all standard budget, but a member might have a question on a footnote or something, I want to give everybody the opportunity to make sure that we go page by page and we know what's in there, and if there's questions, folks can ask it. When we flip 50 pages at a time, it's, and I understand, but I just want to take a minute. It won't take long to flip pages.
Great.
Okay, so we were on page 33, I think. The last unit was tribal liaison. All right?
So I was just making sure that didn't skip any pages. I just didn't. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I just went through and highlighted the exception request at the front, so I haven't.
No, and that's fine. Most of these, you'll just flip through them page by page. That's how we'll.
Okay.
But I just want us to all be able to look at every page as we go through this. I mean,
No, I can do it, guys. Thanks. So I don't know if it would start at 33. I can't read that fast.
Is that where we left off?
Well, I think what happened, Mr. Chairman, is that I had skipped all of the standard budget, and so Chairman Bebout went back to tribal liaison, so we may have skipped something prior to that was in the standard budget, because I didn't. I just had hit the exception budget pages. So I'll just...
Well, and I had been kind of rolling through it while we were moving. They were smaller jumps, of course, but...
So on page 18 is the it looks like the licenses for the NGA, $265,000. It looks like this appropriation is used to pay memberships for the Education Commission of the State, National Governors Association, and WGA. Those dues are due every year, and this is the amount.
Okay, and we've covered pages 20, 21, 22.
Okay.
Policy office. We covered your...
Okay, got all that. Employee moving expenses. So I don't know that we covered on page 25... $40,000 for employee moving expenses. This is money if you're asking or hiring somebody that has to move a distance that can be used to defray up to limited to $5,000 per any one appointee to cover their moving expenses.
Okay.
Okay, then on page 30, guess 34, I'm looking at the Uniform Commission, the Commission on Uniform Laws. This is a national commission. We have two Wyoming representatives get together to work on uniform laws that they recommend, like uniform probate laws. And Judge Keith Couts out of Torrington and Vicki Colgan from the Auditor's Office are Wyoming's representatives on that. I think this includes both dues and travel expenses for those meetings.
Okay. Next is what, special contingency or?
Yeah, special contingency fund. That would be on page 38. That is a biennial appropriation. It also does not revert. Currently, in that account, there is $1.38 million. It's an emergency account for, you know, it could be used for fires or for the floods or for different kinds of emergencies that might arise in the state at the governor's discretion, and gets appropriated on a biennial basis like that.
Okay.
Okay, then on page 40, looks like $40,000 for the Clean Coal Task Force. And I might let you address that, Shona. I think it's some money that's used at the University of Wyoming.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this historically, before the committee was renamed the Advanced Conversion Task Force, it was the Clean Coal Task Force. There had been a $100,000 appropriation from the governor's office to provide administrative support to that task force. Since the School of Energy Resources and legal staff at the University of Wyoming have become more engaged, that administration is largely being taken care of by the School of Energy Resources. However, we thought it would be prudent to maintain a balance of administrative costs in that, in the case something comes up that we need to have some additional funding for.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman,
yeah, go ahead.
In that regard, Mr. Herless gets his salary and work for the SER, but he's available for the governor to help in any way, shape, or form based on a request. Is that not correct? Or?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
So, and this $25,000 doesn't go to pay for any of that. This is for something separate, correct?
No, Mr. Chairman, it does not go to pay for that. It's a separate expense.
Okay.
Okay, so then I think if we get to page 44, we get to the Department of Homeland Security. And maybe Guy wants to come.
Mr. Chairman, Chairman, members of the Appropriations Committee, there are four exception requests within the Office of Homeland Security, and the first, as Chief of Staff has identified, is on page 44. This is Unit 1101. This is the Emergency Management Performance Grant. It's one of our larger grants that we received from the federal government. It is a 50-50 proposition grant, so we match that grant. It provides funding for planning, exercising, and training. The exception request deals with a staff member who we just went through an Office of Inspector General audit, and the findings from that audit suggested that the person that we had located in a grant, it would be better for the roles and responsibilities of that position to be in another grant. So what this does is this exception request is just put that person into a different grant. It takes her from a 100% federal grant into the Emergency Management Performance Grant. There is no additional in any of our budget. There is not any additional program request for general funding.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the next exception request would be on page 62 of our budget. I apologize. Did you want me to go through and?
Yeah, I think just in case members have a question, you can just kind of rolling through your units here and folks can get it.
Mr. Chairman, Unit 1102 is the Community Assistance Program, and this is a program that the state provides assistance in matters of technical assistance for flood insurance in the state of Wyoming. The flood insurance is a program that's run by the federal government, and we participate and work with local floodplain managers in a way to assist them for members of their community through their city councils that would like to participate in the National Flood Insurance Program. There is no exception request for this unit.
Okay.
The next unit is 1103, which is flood mitigation assistance. Again, it is a partner program to look at long-term risk reductions, flood risk reduction opportunities. The amount that you see there, this is 100% federal funding. It is a placeholder, if you will, for federal funding to assist in that program. There is no general fund request, and there is no exception budget request.
Okay.
(clears throat) Section 1104 is our hazardous materials program. It's a program that's funded by the Department of Transportation, and we do an awful lot in response with our agency for weapons of mass destruction materials or chemical, biological, explosive, nuclear hazmat calls that 8 regional emergency response teams that will respond throughout the state when called upon. This outlines what the funding principles are for this particular effort, which is to implement emergency response plans at the local level. And there is no additional request for, this is a matching program, there is no additional request for general fund, and not an exception, no exception requests. 1105, Mr. Chairman, is the waste isolation pilot plant, or waste isolation plan as it's identified. This is in Carlsbad, New Mexico, which is a program that transports those wastes, transuric wastes, from across the country and then are deposited at the WIP facility in New Mexico. these funds, again, help to develop and implement activities in relationship to prevention and emergency preparedness plans at the local level. Again, this is one of those budget items that does not have an exception request. Okay. The 1106 account is our disaster contingency account, and this there is no additional request. This is a what I would call, Mr. Chairman, it's a rollover account for a disaster. Usually there is $750,000 in this particular fund item, and we are not requesting additional funding. So as I understand that process, this budget will just roll over with that contingency amount in place.
Mr. Chairman.
It will if we choose to do that. It'll expire in July 1st and will, in fact, revert unless we choose to roll it forward. Representative Stubbs.
And Mr. Chairman and Director Cameron, I was just wondering the source of those funds that are in there, the original source, were those general funds or were they come from somewhere else?
Mr. Chairman, in this particular account, those are general funds.
And the amount is $750,000?
Correct.
And none of that's been spent then?
Mr. Chairman, not this year.
Not this year. It was in the previous year.
Yes. It was during the flood fight.
Right. Okay. Any other? Okay. Thanks. Continue.
1107 is a search and rescue account. It's one of those special funds accounts that the Wyoming Office of Homeland Security is the administrative support to this particular account. Statutorily, the sheriffs of the state of Wyoming are charged with search and rescue activities for folks to get lost. And as a result of efforts through providing a voluntary donation through those recreational vehicles, snowmobiling, fishing, hunting, when you go in to get your license, you're often asked by those vendors if you would like to donate to search and rescue. Legislature last year passed a piece of legislation that changed that $1 donation to a base amount of $2. And so, Mr. Chairman, this is an account that we manage on behalf of the Search and Rescue Council that's statutorily established, and there is no exception request for this unit. That's the amount that historically we bring in to support search and rescue missions across the state.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Representative Stubbs.
Director Cameron, have you seen any, as a result of that change in the voluntary amount, that was voluntary anyway, I guess, have you seen any change in the amounts of donations into the fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, we don't have history yet. November, I believe, was the first month that change takes place, and so we will look to see what the impact or is, whatever that may be.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Guy, can you tell us how much was spent out of that account last year? out of the $600,000?
Mr. Chairman, I can. Representative Burkhardt, I do not have that number with me, but I'll get that for you. It needs to be with clarification. Over the last year, we do it from March to April, from year to year, is our accounting for that, those missions. And we had 301 missions. Now, that does not mean that every one of those involved search and rescue. But I will get you some statistics and the amount of money for this last year.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I apologize. What page are you on, Guy?
I will be on page 62.
I had one question going clear back to the National Flood Insurance Program about Shoshone. Did we resolve that issue where they thought Shoshone was in a floodplain, and that's all been taken care of?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, it has. And those parties are satisfied, as I understand, and also received their money back as a result of that. Those efforts were initiated by yourself, Senator, and my staff has told me that we have a positive outcome.
Yeah, just for the committee's information, that somebody in Washington, D.C. saw a Boyson Reservoir and the dams on the north end of it, but they thought the water would run downhill and would flood Shoshone, which was on the other end of the... It was just hilarious. Anyway, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, page 62 is Unit 1109. This is the map modern...
Representative Moniz has a question.
Okay.
On page 61, Game and Fish Non-Statutory 547-379, where's that? What does that represent?
You're on page 61.
Yeah, 61.
What's the question?
Yeah, Representative Moniz, I see where you're at on code 5040, Game and Fish Non-Statutory. Let me do some homework, sir. I'm not able to tell you what that amount is.
I can answer that, Mr. Chairman, Representative. That just represents the dollar amount. That's the source of the funding. So that's the $1 donation broken into a different category there at the bottom. The way this breaks in, you show the budget amount, and then you show the source of the funding. So it's just the donations for search and rescue are funneled through Game and Fish because they're made in conjunction with purchasing a fishing license or a hunting license.
So that comes from the $1, Mr. Chairman, the $1.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Game and Fish, and then the commerce is probably what? That's some of the ATVs and
probably from Parks and Rec buy-in fees. That sometimes when you buy the ORV tags and the there's different kinds of sales of recreational boating.
Okay, very good.
Thanks, Kerry. Mr. Chairman, we were on page 62, 1109, which is the MAP Modernization Program, and this is also a partner program, 100% federally funded, that is a placeholder for MAP modernization efforts for existing flood insurance maps, only for the conversion to a digital format, and FEMA has done away with that program. While there is still mapping done from FEMA, it's not this program. So it doesn't exist. It's not one that we can fall back on and utilize. And so this is an effort to remove it from our budget.
Okay.
Unit 1110 is our state support fund, and Mr. Chairman, we cannot use federal monies that flow through the Department of Homeland Security for response. And so the legislature saw the foresight in providing a statute that would allow for our agency as well as those partners in response to be able to go to a fund. What we utilize this fund for mainly is to support those missions of our regional emergency response teams, of which there are 8 across the state. We also use it to support 7 bomb teams located across the state, and then internally to our organization in deployment. The differences you see across there is the reduction from 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016 is about a $57,000 10% reduction, and we took that as a result of the request from the legislature this last year. In this particular budget, there is not a request for general fund increase, and there's no exception request.
Okay.
Unit 1111, Mr. Chairman, is the Public Safety Communications Commission, and this is a particular budget that came our direction as the result of reorganization within ETS. And within the Department of Administration and Information, this position used to be housed there. And it was, quite frankly, a better fit and a good choice by the legislature to house it within our agency that deals with interoperability. And a lot of our grant opportunities or mission assignments are regarding interoperability and communications across the state. Why this is an exception request is the budget of the PSCC is a standard budget request, but the exception is for the personnel. And this has historically always been a position that has been reviewed by the legislature, and we did not make any exception to that for your review. So that is the purpose behind the request for the personnel side of this budget. I might add that this position also supports Governor Meade's broadband initiatives, and so when we look to the future for broadband, we were able to soft match part of this position to be able to seek some grant funding for planning initiatives to broadband.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, this person is going to do a lot of different things. The nationwide public safety broadband, soft match, something also, is this something, how was this being handled in the past? It wasn't then, I guess, is what you're saying.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, historically, this position has been utilized, I think, mainly for WildLink initiatives. And maybe there have been some broadband initiatives that I'm unaware of prior to my time with the state. What is new is the result of federal legislation that has put in place public safety communications broadband that was just passed by the Congress here in the last year and a half. And the goal out of public safety communications in the future, and it came as the result of the 911 Commission, was to be able to provide interoperability from a broadband perspective as well. And so our future has promise for looking at utilizing a telephone that could be used in the field for more than just the communication side, but be able to draw down upon pre-plans of a building or an officer responding to a traffic accident and being able to see ahead of time what that intersection looks like and what he is going to be faced with. So that's the broadband of the future. There is an effort working within ETS and Flint Water's office with Troy Babbitt, who is responsible for the broadband initiatives when it comes to public safety. We are just supporting that initiative with part of the salary for this this position.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I just clarify for a minute. This is not a new position. It's been with the agency for some time, filling this role. What's different about it has always been time limited, and it's just a recognition that it's been a long-term position in the budget, time limited biennium to biennium, and that there does appear to be a need, since it's been in the budget for such a long time, for it to be permanent. And so it's just a change in that status.
Well, that's true, Mr. Co-Chair, but it's only through June 30th of 16, and then we're going to continue to evaluate, I guess. So you'll come back to the next biennium and say whether we need it or not. And it won't be in the standard budget. It'll come back in the expanded budget. Okay?
Unit 1112 is our radiological services program. And this is an exception request as well. The history behind this is we have a position that has continued over time historically to be B11 through the B11 process support our training initiatives when it comes to radiological incidents in our radiological program. The basis behind this exception request is to eliminate that B11 process, to standardize it in our budget, and so this is the effort to do that. Mr. Chairman, Unit 1113 is pre-disaster mitigation. Again, this is a budget area where there is no exception budget request. It deals with pre-disaster mitigation. It's a placeholder for $200,000 for federal funding to provide technical and planning assistance to local jurisdictions. I believe finally, Mr. Chairman, is Unit 1114, which is our Homeland Security Grant Program. And this takes a position that historically on page 77, explanation-wise, this position was, as I referenced earlier, this position was funded by Homeland Security in this budget 1114, and after we received some guidance from the Office of Inspector General for an audit this year, the guidance was based on the roles and responsibilities of that position. It should be into another budget area, which we reflected on earlier, which was 1101. So this is just making that move. Mr. Chairman, I believe that concludes the four exception areas to our budget. I'd be more than happy to try to answer any questions you have.
Any other questions, members? Okay, thank you. Now we're on data center recruitment, is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. This is money that was placed in the governor's office specifically for the recruitment of data centers. And then the governor's office actually B11 that money over to the business center for their work with the recruitment of data centers. There remains in this account $10.5 million. The money that was used out of the $15 million was used for the successful recruitment of Microsoft to Cheyenne. And so we're asking that the $10.5 million be maintained in the governor's office. That's there's some specific statutory language having that under the oversight of the governor, but being utilized out of the business council. And so it seems to be have been really productive. So we're asking that the $10.5 million that's remaining out of the 15 be.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr.
On one of the sheets from the governor, he talked about $10 million extra for the business council, but he calls it data centers. But it really isn't data centers. It's business-ready community. Is that not correct?
Well, I think the wording in the budget, Mr. Chairman, is actually for large business. I don't know that it's I can't quote the language to you exactly, but it does work for more than data centers. Worked for like Magpul or any of those other kinds of things that might.
Yeah, but it's not specifically for data centers because you already got $10 million here that's already there you're requesting to keep for data centers. The extra $10 million might be used for it, but it certainly could be used for other things in business ready communities.
That's correct.
Okay. I think we were talking on the
NERPA.
Yeah, we're talking about NERPA earlier when we kind of started to go back. And so the NERPA is the fund that's used to help with local governments, state and local projects on the natural resources, EISs, different kinds of NEPA processes and the like. And so it's really mostly granted out, but there are a substantial amount of these funds that are used by the Attorney General's office when there's special expertise needed, for example, in the grizzly bear or the wolf or sage-grass kinds of litigation. So, and so I think what I was telling you was that there's about $1,380,000 in the account now that we would be asking to be carried forward into addition to that, and I didn't know the exact number of how much of that $1,380,000 is obligated. Some of it is. So then the next page 90 and 91 is the baseline scientific assessment, which the legislature had appropriated $500,000. We're asking for an additional appropriation of the $500,000 and in addition to carry forward the amount of money remaining in the account, which is $500,000, so none of that money has yet been spent. But work is underway, I think, to advance very quickly now as part of the energy policy to go ahead and do the... I'm off of that. So I was on...
We skipped the endangered species, Mr. Co-Chair.
Did I skip something?
Yes. We did, on page 89.
Okay.
88 starts on 88.
Okay. The endangered species account, that's an account that is used mostly for grants to the game and fish to do work on sensitive species. And so then that... so I think there's no exception request. That's just... a request for the standard budget to carry forward. There is money in that account now.
That was, yeah, how much is in there?
About $1.3 million is in there now, Chairman. And that money is given to the game and fish.
So you spent about a half a million out of the last, yeah, this last biennium. Okay, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kerry Joe, over on page 89. Second paragraph, last sentence, the fund has also been used to conduct research at UW and to answer management questions about the effects of land use on sensitive species. And we have I guess some information about how to get a hold of those research efforts. The reason I bring that up because on Select Water, some of the research requests that they had for our Select Water funds seem to be problematic to basically agriculture and industry.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator, I think maybe, yeah, absolutely, we could get you access to those, but Sean Reese may be able to actually talk about them.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, before a biennial budget number is put together, the Game and Fish and the Natural Diversity Database folks at the University of Wyoming get together with members of industry and go through the scores of species that are on the potential to be listed. And that group, including industry, prioritizes the species that they feel are of most concern and for which the state of Wyoming needs data. And so the list is whittled down to four or five species for which the university then sends folks out into the field to do counts or other habitat assessments. This past biennium, the current biennium that we're in, the projects included three species of fish, golden eagle status surveys, Preble's jumping mouse surveys, grassland birds, freshwater mussel surveys, swift fox, pygmy rabbit surveys, and blackback woodpecker surveys. The team that is evaluating priorities for this coming biennium have narrowed down their focus to, again, continuing work on those three species of fish, foraging behavior of a species of hawk, statewide inventory of black-tailed prairie dogs, clarifying exposure risk of small mammals to energy development, and spotted skunk distribution. So again, those are species that industry and the game and fish feel that we need to make sure that we have as much information on as possible prior to a listing.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are there any standing committees that look at that, I guess the research projects, or is it entirely determined by the game and fish industry ad hoc representatives, how is it determined? Is there any legislative oversight whatsoever?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I do not believe that they are presented to any standing committee or the legislature. I believe that it is as an ad hoc prioritization. We do receive updates of the research activities and statements of need that we're happy to forward to you as well.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I bring that up is that in Select Water, you do have that oversight. And what we found, and it seems like you have it's almost a program to support graduate assistants in their endeavor to get their degree or do their thesis. And so it's necessarily not driven by what has to happen in the field, but it's really driven by the needs and wants of a graduate assistant. And I would think that if we look at this, that we're probably not too far off the mark in that characterization of this program. But I may be wrong, but with no legislative oversight at all, whether it should go to minerals or to gravel and rec or to agriculture, the ag committee, or somebody, I think we probably should look at it and think about maybe a legislative oversight. So I'm not sure whether a footnote in this area might be appropriate, just so we have an idea about what type of research is going on, and make sure that we don't lead ourselves in a direction we don't want to go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Kocher.
Yeah, we're asking Game and Fish to do certain things, and the money then is directed to Game and Fish from this account. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, there is money that directly passes through to the Natural Diversity Database, which is a MAMA database of genetic inventories, so that we have that at the ready. A portion of the money, approximately $160,000, goes to WIGISC to work on the sage-grouse calculation tools for density disturbance to support the governor's executive order. Governor holds back a portion of the funding, and then the balance of funding is set in with these priorities that will then be implemented by the Game and Fish and the University of Wyoming.
So then, Mr. Co-Chair, some money does go to Game and Fish, correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that is correct.
Okay, the question is, and maybe this is for Game and Fish, do they show that as revenues that they coming into their system? That's the question I have. Because we're talking about where we implement, legislative or executive branch directives, and then we don't give them the money to do it. And I just want to be sure that they reflect this properly.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that question, but we can follow up with you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding was that there was only $500,000 of this spent last biennium, and maybe that was a misunderstanding, but that there was a $1.3 million carryover. And if that's wrong, correct me, but if it's correct, why are we then, it seems like the budgeting should be reversed, that we would budget $500,000 to top it off to what it's been the last two biennium, rather than budget an additional $1.3 million, which would, exceed what we budgeted the last two biennium.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubbs, and this is an account. I'd have to actually get that breakout for you. It has $1.3 million left in it, but it actually never reverts. I think that's from it just doesn't by the nature of the way it's set up. So that carryover might not necessarily be simply from last biennium, and I can get you a breakout of that account because I can't answer that question off the top of my head today. And Mr. Chairman, I can answer the question about the game and fish. It's not reflected in their budget as income. It comes through the grant process, and it comes through on an annual or in the middle of the year, so they don't bring it forward in their budgeting process to reflect it as revenue or income in their budget.
Mr. Chairman, can I follow up?
Yeah, follow up.
I would be interested. I mean, really, my question is, what is the level of that account over the last few biennium, and does this – I mean, it makes some sense to restore that level, but I'm not sure why we would, you know, bump it up way above what that level has been, and if we're doing that, there should be some explanation why we're doing that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, I will provide that. I will tell you that what I have been told, and it's not really been an issue during Governor Mead's administration, but, you know, it's hard to predict when there will be a run of species that requires a lot of work, and the intent was always that this count was there and available if there was that need to react quickly to, for example, Preble's jumping mouse or any of the other kind of species that Sean said. So I think a history would be helpful to you on that. Okay. So now we're on page 91, yep. Mr. Chairman, so which is the baseline scientific assessment, which is kind of a GIS project on the federal lands. It's an important project, and I think Sean Reese, again, in this project has been instrumental, so I'll let him address that, where there's $500,000 appropriated in last session. We're asking that to be carried forward and for an additional appropriation. At this point in time, none of the original appropriation has been spent.
Mr. Chairman, Sean Reese. As Carrie mentioned, this is a complementary legislation that supports the energy strategy intended to collect baseline scientific data on public lands for any number of purposes and in support of energy and agricultural economic sectors. We discovered that many state agencies have a great amount of baseline data right now. However, it's been somewhat compartmentalized and not shared across agencies. So the first goal of this baseline funding was to work with ETS and the Geographic Information Science Group at the University of Wyoming to pull together all of the state's GIS baseline data so it's in one place, so that the pipeline authority is working with the same data that may have been developed by the Office of State Lands and Investments, or a cultural resource data is available to OGCC, for instance. That process, the startup cost to pull all of that together and to create a centralized map is, I believe, $380,000 with some ongoing expenses. The balance that is left over is available per the legislation can be used to match with private dollars for the collection of additional baseline information. Right now, we are looking at a specific proposal for an inventory of cheatgrass, which is an invasive species and has some potential ramifications for energy development and sage grouse and so forth. So that is a potential survey that we could use this money for and then create the geographic layer that would be pulled together with this master clearinghouse of GIS baseline data.
Mr. Kocher, that match was a part of the original legislation, as I recall, correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, private match is allowed in the legislation.
So are you anticipating that this $500,000 will have that same requirement?
Mr. Chairman, we're contemplating that with the collection of future baseline data as it's identified, we can use private industry dollars for that as well, yes.
So you'll have a match requirement?
Mr. Chairman, we've not promulgated any sort of rules, but that is the idea, that if there is a to help prioritize what baseline data needs there are, I think having industry private dollars match is an indication of that priority.
Now, how much money did you say is still in there? You said
the the full appropriation, Mr. Chairman, is
so
that $500,000. None of it's
still
been
good.
Spent.
Okay. Got it. Okay, good. Thanks. Anything else, members? Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Coach.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the international trade. You know, we had a mission, and we set aside, I think, in the last budget session, or the last supplemental budget, excuse me, $250,000 in the governor's office to implement and do some things about trying to get some more exports for our markets and coal and other things, uranium, tourism, ag, all of these. And it's pretty successful from what I gather. Now, I notice that it's not in here for the next biennium. Now, are you anticipating that the $250 we put in there is enough for the next two-year cycle, or is it going to show up someplace else in the Business Council? What's the status of the international trade?
Mr. Chairman, that budget note that established the $250,000 for international trade required a end-of-the-year report to your committee and to the Joint Business, Minerals, and Economic Development. We're putting that report together right now to talk about how that money has been spent, the opportunities that we see for Wyoming exports, and making sure that Wyoming remains competitive with our neighbors. We're also putting together an analysis of how other states are approach and fund international trade, so that the legislature and the governor have some comparables and some options to evaluate.
Mr. Kocher, I'd like to, maybe once you get that, maybe the governor could send us a letter, you know, presenting that to us. And if he thinks, I think it's a good idea, and I think in having Matt out there doing what he did, and some of the information I got back, it was very successful. It's something I think we ought to continue. And so maybe a letter from him telling us what he thinks, and we could put it into as an expanded or exception budget request and get it in the process. Or we could always do it later anyway. But I'd like to be sure that that doesn't fall through the cracks.
Mr. Chairman, the governor would feel much the same way that you would about that. I think it was not an intention not to continue with the international trade development. He asked for the $2 million as part of the energy strategy, and, of course, that's it's not solely limited to, or international trade isn't solely about energy, but that was part of it, and so we'll make sure that we address all of those when we get together.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. I think we're good for now. All right. Well, we appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the time.
Brett has something here.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, since there are a number of requests for extension of appropriations, and there's been a lot of discussion about what the balance of those that have been carried forward prior might be, as well as what some of the other accounts are that support the governor's office in a variety of ways. Would it be helpful if we put a summary together of what all of those numbers are?
I think it would, and I think, though, we like asking that question, and then we can type a note right on that page. And so when we're explaining it to members or we go back through markups, the note is right on that page. So both would be fine. We'll probably still ask questions, even if we have the sheet. Won't be good, though.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my thought was just if you could have all of those numbers in one place,
spot,
it might
be
helpful to be able to sort through all
Thank
of
you.
That.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good job. Appreciate it. Okay, next, First Lady. And you guys, welcome. Yeah, we got to stand up. Good for you anyway. Get the blood flowing.
She's been waiting very patiently.
Oh.
Yeah. They even have a guest.
Good afternoon. How are you? Nice to see you. You guys blew it, man. You gave up the iPad. Blew it.
Yeah,
It's kind of a mini break right in between. We're not used to that. Haven't got our game faces on yet. Haven't got our multiple hour sitting stamina. Oh, this whole sitting thing, we're going to get used to it. Hour after hour. Well, welcome, First Lady. Glad you're here, and I look forward to walking through your budget. I'm trying to pull it up. We've got this technology lift going here. We're trying to. I got to flip back.
I don't think I am.
You're on. You're
there
live.
Go. Okay. Good afternoon, Chairman Bevout, Chairman Harshman, all the members of the Appropriations Committee. Pleasure to be with you all here today. I have asked Sue Akey, the residence manager, to present the budget on my behalf this year, and so she will take it from here.
Perfect. Okay. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you, Chairman. I guess I'd like to thank you all for having us here today, and my name again is Sue Akey, and I'm the governor's residence manager, and I'm here to present the budget for the residents. The governor's residence, we think in essence, is Wyoming's home. It is the place where we can open the door and welcome those that live here or work here or those that come to visit. We can offer coffee or a meal, good conversation, lively debate, and warm hospitality. The residence should reflect Wyoming and showcase our pride in our state, our pride in our businesses, our industry, our open space, and our solid values. It's a place to show that what Wyoming offers. It reflects the spirit of Wyoming people. It should draw people in and invite them back. And I think that you see that too. We have developed the budget and made decisions throughout the year with these goals in mind. Everyone should feel at home in the residence. So with your help, we have worked to eliminate gaps from soup bowls to picture placement. We have worked to make sure that the repairs and maintenance are timely, accomplished, and on the grounds and to the residents and in the supplies are used. I think that you will be pleased with the results. The standard budget for the residents is $693,239, and it is entirely general funds. The residence has 3 full-time and 1 part-time staff. And the part-time staff has not been filled. Connie left this last February, and the First Lady asked if we could absorb, between the 3 of us that are there full-time, the duties that she did, and we have been able to do that, and I think we've done it sufficiently. And so we are doing really well. The standard budget supports the staff at $463,675. The residence budget supports dinners, meetings, communications, and more. In the spirit of Wyoming's home, the governor and First Lady have tried to open the door often and to give access to many. In 2013, we have, to date, 43 events, and we have had 3,493 attendees to those events. The 200 series covers all food and printing supplies for those events. The residence has a secondary budget of $5,000 for the replacement of china and linens. We believe this is sufficient to cover that obligation. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Members, any questions?
Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, go ahead.
One of the neat things that happened at the residency was several years ago they had every chair, and they put each county had a, I think they embroidered it or did something with it. Now those have been moved over here to the Capitol. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And they're down in the governor's office now, and then you've replaced those chairs with some other chairs.
That's correct.
And that's really a neat thing to do, although it was so nice in the in the governor's mansion. I can remember going over there and seeing that. Maybe there's something we could do. You probably thought about that, Carol, that could get all the counties involved and feel part of the governor's residence again. That really was neat to see. I think there was some competition when they did it, and counties really got excited, and everybody had their chance to do things, and it was really really a good thing. So maybe there's a way to get 23 more chairs for you. You thought about anything like that?
Well, Chairman Bevout, Chairman Harshman, members, well, I would agree with you first that that was a tremendous project, and I think those chairs served Wyoming beautifully as a governor's residence for a number of years, and we certainly were delighted to have them. I think there came a point, though, when some of those chairs were no longer in good condition.
That
some
is.
Of them were having structural issues that became frightening on a few occasions. And actually, I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity to go down to the formal office in the governor's office there and see those green chairs, but I will tell you that they are tremendously a great addition to that office. They look so much better there than they do now at the governor's mansion with the changes to the carpet and furnishings that have gone on over the years there. So to answer your question, though, I haven't thought of a project that all the counties could be involved with the exception that one of the focuses of my time has been Wyoming's youth, and I think you know that with my initiative, and I have asked each year at the High School Art Symposium for high school artists around the state to give us the opportunity to display their works for a year in the governor's mansion, and we started out selecting only three pieces. The next year we selected five. This last year we selected 15 pieces. And so that has grown, and I feel like is a wonderful way to show the talent of those young kids, and they do come from every county of Wyoming. So,
yeah, Mr. Co-Chair, when you came to Fremont County, it was like the First Lady's coming, and oh, by the way, she's bringing the governor. And so it was really well received. You don't have to tell the governor that, but that was the reality of it.
Thank you.
How is the, you know, when I first came to the legislature in 2003, I think was my first, and new Governor Friedenthal at that time, and the residence area really needed some hard work. I mean, it had some of that wonderful 70s carpet, shag carpet still, and so there was a tremendous amount of work. Some of that, I guess, was privately raised or donated. Some were appropriations, but how, I guess, as a home that you've been in there for a few years with kids, I mean, is there any more work we need to do? I know that's a tough thing for you to come and ask, hey, we need this, this, and this. It's not a real politically popular thing to ask for, like asking for a new governor's residence or those kind of things. But how is it to live in there? Do we need some more work done in there? Or?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you are correct. There have been a number of projects that have been undertaken out there. I will tell you that as far as the carpeting and chandelier in the front entryway that were added were done completely with private funding. And that was a source of a little bit of discussion among the foundation members because they're concerned that carpeting maybe wasn't something they thought should fall under that. I don't know the answer to that. You all, that's something for you to, I guess, decide. But they decided to go ahead and graciously fund that. Very glad they did. Somebody referenced the 70s shag carpet, and I I will agree that it was time. That carpet was well-worn and needed stretching, and a number of things was stained and whatnot. More to the point of your question about additional things, I would ask Senator Bebout if he might have noticed yesterday when he came in the evening the lighting situation in the public side of the residence there. I have brought up on a number of occasions that the only place we have to have a meeting is in the formal dining room. It's the only place that will really sit more than four people. That is, I guess, a subject that we may bring up with the foundation as well, but there is a lighting issue. It's just very difficult to conduct a meeting in kind of the ambiance of a romantic dinner. So that is the situation right now.
Well, Mr. Coacher, I missed the romantic part of that last night. Did you?
Yeah, I don't recall a dinner.
I won't ask the governor whether he did.
The three of us, Coach here had his Levi's on. I think your husband had his flannel shirt, and I was in my sweats. So. I never thought of that, but it was kind of dark in there, I guess, as you went in there. I mean, it was kind of a different. But as I remarked, I got the text, and I'm driving. I was just pulling in the driveway. I just thought there's not many states where you just pull right up to the front door. I'm walking up. I see you two sitting there and just walk into the governor's residence. Pretty special, really. It's pretty neat. But I guess I would say then, as you wrap this up, that if there's things, I mean, we'll never know unless you tell us. And I know that's probably a difficult thing to ask for, but I think there's ways that, you know, obviously it's an investment of the state, just like this capital and everything else. Mm-hmm. We want to take care of it and not get into a situation where it costs much more to replace and those kind of things as opposed to maintenance. Okay? So yeah. I guess let us know somehow if there's things you think that we can do to keep improving that.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps she could invite us all over for dinner and we could do a tour and make a wish list for them.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have one.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, under code 252, what are we renting that's $5,160?
I believe that that's the lawn equipment that we, you know, that we have to, sometimes we rent outdoor equipment like heaters when we have parties and it's too cold outside, or there's a variety of different things that we may need to rent.
We might need to follow up with them, but it could be with Mark.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just curious that if it was items that it was easier for the state to have ownership of rather than rental of.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Escobel, I will look into that and find out exactly what that is and let you know.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anything else, members? Okay. Well, we appreciate your time and presentation, and we'll we probably won't have you on the call back. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like a little samples of those green shag carpet, I do have some for you.
That's okay. I probably ought to keep some for the museum somewhere or something.
I do keep some.
So we probably won't see again. So Merry Christmas until we come back again. Probably won't be on our call back. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Senator.
Is the residence going to be open for the holidays, decorated for the holidays?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, it is. And is it Sunday the 15th? I can't remember the day of the open house, from 3 to 5. The residence is open. And, of course, you can come by at any time if you would like to see.
We'll be in town.
It's fully decorated right now, and we'd love to have you come up. So.
Yep. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, there we go.
All right.
Okay. You need to take a break. We'll take
any time. Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember the date of that off the top of my head. Thank you.
See, it's just a great presentation.
Welcome. Welcome, Mr. Secretary. Thank you for being here today. And really, we'd, you know, any introductions you have of your staff or anything, and then however you're going to proceed through your budget, we'd like to kind of roll from the front to the back, unit by unit.
Right.
Of course, pointing out any exception requests or carryover funds or any of those kind of things you'd like to point out that we'll for sure have questions about. But, and, you know, we're part-timers, so we always need re-educated, speaking for myself anyway. And so appreciate you being here. So the floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for having us, committee members. First, I'd like to introduce the staff that's here with me today from the Secretary's office. Deputy Secretary of State Pat Arp, Kelly Varick, who's our chief auditor from our compliance division, Tom Cowan is the director of administrative services, Karen Wheeler, director of our compliance division, and Andrea Byrne, director of our technology department. As you know, my office regulates everything from business formation to securities to elections. This agency has always been efficient and frugal. This year, you will see an exception budget request, but my office is not asking for any new programs, but rather just to maintain our critical operations and our level of service. I'd like to, at this time, ask Kelly to walk us through the budget, after which Pat will address each of the exception issues. Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. As Secretary Maxfield said, I will just walk you through the first few pages of the budget, give you a high-level overview, and then turn it over to Deputy Arp for the exception requests. We believe you're working from the 2015-16 biennium budget request book for the Secretary of State's office. If you could just turn to the second page, which is the table of contents. From the table of contents, you'll see that the Secretary of State's office operates out of four different funds: Administration, Securities Enforcement, Bucking Horse and Rider, and Constitutional Amendment Publication. If you'll flip to page 3, in the first column under Description and Division, again you'll see Administration. If you follow that across to column 2, you'll see that this is the bulk of our budget, currently at $6.7 million. This is our day-to-day operations. This is general fund money, and this is where we're asking for our exception request today. The Securities Enforcement Fund is dedicated exclusively to the regulation of stockbrokers and brokerage firms. This is funded by special revenue, so this is not general fund money. This comes from the registration fees from stockbrokers. The purpose of this fund is for auditing, investigating, and the education of fraud prevention. There is no exception budget request in this unit. The last two funds are more of a means for money to flow through. The Bucking Horse and Rider Fund is spending authority only, and it is not general fund money. It is for the promotion and protection of the Bucking Horse and Rider trademark, and these funds come from royalties, and again, this is spending authority only. We do have a negative exception request in this unit, and Deputy Arp will address that in just a moment. Finally, the Constitutional Amendment Publication Fund. Constitutional amendments are statutorily required to be published by our office, and this is a mechanism for that payment. When amendments are passed, money is specifically designated to track payment of the publication, and any remaining funds revert to the general fund annually. There is no exception budget request in this unit as well. Mr. Chairman, before I hand it over to Deputy Arp, I'll just give you a quick overview of the next few pages, the structure of our and the duties of our office. If you could just turn to page 6, under section 4 of our basic facts. We are an agency of 30 people. We operate on just over $7 million, and our work returns roughly $40 million in revenue per biennium. We service a very wide variety of clients. Examples include the banking industry, county clerks, attorneys, accountants, business owners, stockbrokers, notaries public, lobbyists, other state agencies filing rules, and statewide and legislative political candidates. The Secretary of State's office has 6 divisions, and I'll just highlight some of those for you on page 7. Our business division registers corporations and 12 other different types of business entities, along with trademarks, trade names, and uniform commercial code liens and searches. Our administrative services division provides all fiscal and personnel services, along with commissioning notaries public, issuing apostilles and certification documents, maintaining the record of state agency rules, and they also administer the use and protection of the bucking horse and rider. Our compliance division oversees the securities industry, as well as the activities of commercial registered agents, by regulating and auditing registered agents and stockbrokers, taking enforcement actions against investment fraud and security scams, and by educating the public. Our technology division provides...
Question right there, Mr.
Yeah,
Co-Chair.
Go ahead.
Yes.
And maybe for Max on this one, I know that we had some legislation a couple of years ago because of the use and abuse in Wyoming of the fraudulent with the commercial registered agents and the LLCs, and you had a huge number of applications. My question is, has that gone down substantially as a result of the legislation we passed, and is it working?
It is. It's working. We're not there yet. The first 12 months that it was in that we kicked it off, we eliminated 7,000 fraudulent corporations, and we're still, we still get reports, but the advertisements online that were very provocative before are no longer as big of a problem as they were. So we think we got our arms halfway around it, and the good thing about it is that the laws that we passed have had absolutely no negative repercussions on the mom and pop, the Wyoming legitimate businesses, or the out-of-state legitimate businesses that are registered here. But we're sure getting a handle on more and more of the businesses that are just using our good name. So, yes, it's working very well, Senator.
Co-Chair, yep. On the registered agents, I think the statute says you can do no more than 10. Have there been any complaints? Some people maybe want it to be 15, or that number seemed to be working?
We have not had any complaints on that. So the law you passed, I think that was the last one you passed, has been working fine.
And it's 10, is it? I think it's 10 is 10. The limitation. Okay, thank you.
Right, 10 and then your commercial.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you. On the bucking horse and rider trademark issues, is the state bucking horse and rider different than, say, the UW's logo, so to speak, or is that administered under your department as well?
We cooperate with the university, and it is the enforcement of it does come to our agency. And in my time here, we've had several instances where we've had to step in and ask people to no longer use it. A high school, for instance, that was using it as their mascot, we had to ask them to back off. But our situation is people say, well, why are you picking on a small high school, or why a restaurant in Colorado or whatever? If we don't, the minute we don't enforce it, that we're aware of it, we have a chance of losing it. So we're very, very stringent on that. And, you know, we get people from Wyoming are pretty proud of it, and they'll call us and say, hey, I'm out in Massachusetts, and this restaurant has the bucking horse and rider. So we jump on it.
Follow up. So yeah. The university is using your authority to use that logo. Is that correct, Dan?
Yes. We work very closely with the university on that.
Okay. Mr. Coach, yeah, go ahead.
Another question, and it really works on your annual reports requirement for LLCs, C-Corps, S-Corps, and all of that. And now you have a computer program that spits it out, and that works. One of the things that I've noticed, at least in my side of it, I get those, maybe the first one comes a little early before it's even due, but maybe it's so easy that to send them out that it's not a matter of saving money if you did them a little later. Is it just a matter of it's already in the process, it's in the system, and they just send it out? I know I think I get one 60 days before it's due reminding me I better look at it, and then I get one 30 days say you better really look at it, and then I get one, or maybe it's not quite like that, I forgot to look at it. Is there any way cost savings you could do by maybe not doing that first one, or is it pretty well just it's in the system and it's there, so let's use it?
Mr. Chairman, there isn't cost savings because it just programmed right into the system to send that email message to you. A lot of people have said they like getting it pretty early because it gives them a chance to get with their attorney or their registered agent or someone else if they are not handling their business for themselves. So we just set it up on the 60-day, the 30-day, and the, hey, you forgot, just to make sure that people had plenty of notice. Most of the feedback we've had around that has been pretty good.
It works. Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just finish up with our technology division, which provides tech support for the agency along with project management, oversight for the building, updating, and maintaining of the agency's numerous electronic programs, and, of course, our election division, which oversees statewide elections, but they're also responsible for campaign finance, lobbyist registration, and ethics disclosure. Our agency is small but extremely diverse in duties. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will turn it over to Deputy Arp to present the budget exceptions.
Another broad question, Mr. Co-Chair. On the UCC lien filings, you know, one of the things that's really does not work, it's the way they file liens on airplanes. And it, you have to go through the FAA, and it's just sort of like they tell you what they think it is, but it doesn't really mean anything. Has there been any movements nationwide, Max, to try to come up with some kind of a uniform system of really filing appropriate liens on aircraft so that there's no confusion? And you, I mean, there's no confusion on most of the liens that you file, but with that one, it really is. Has there been anything nationally to look at a better way of doing that?
Mr. Chairman, as you know, we follow the Uniform Commercial Code, so it is national, the code that we follow. I believe there have been some discussions at the national level, and the person who would know a lot more about that than we do would be Vicki Colgan, because she has been our uniform law commissioner for a while for this state, and she actually just went through a recodification of that UCC, so I could find out from her, or I'm sure you could address it with her, and I think she'd have the most knowledge on the discussions at the national level.
Senator Perkins?
And just a general question, somebody asked me this the other day, and I said, well, I'll be talking to the Secretary of State's office. I'll ask him. Have you guys, where are we, or are you anticipating, or do you think it's a good idea or bad idea to permit online filings and kind of going to a more digital opportunity where right now everything is still a hard copy file in your office?
We'd be delighted if we could do that. Colorado has done it, and their initial expense was $8 million, and then they've had a follow-up of, mm-hmm. of additional $4 million to keep it up and running. And our situation is we just don't think we're at the right place in our budget with the state to take that on. Additionally, it would require a major effort and probably more staff to make that happen. We'd love it. It's working great in Colorado, but it's really an expense that we don't feel that we could come to this committee, come to the legislature in good conscience during a time when we're cutting back to do that. But I'll tell you, the renewals, if it worked anything like the renewals, people are really pleased with that, and we're getting a lot of good feedback on being able to renew your business online.
How much money are you? You said $8 million in Colorado. How about, what's your estimate?
That's the only thing we've had to go on, because we haven't. And so, because of knowing that was somewhat similar, that stopped us right there, and we didn't research it any further because we just didn't think we could do it at this time.
And you may not have this information, but on the revenue side, I mean, your office is one of the actually generates, you know, cash flow into the state for that. And What from the filings associated with either new corporations, new entities, do you have that segregated out from the renewals?
Yes, we do, and I think that'll be part of Pat Arp's report.
We'll just wait for that.
Okay. Thanks. That's a good question. We're very proud of that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, to look at our exception request, I think the best place to go is page 12. You'll see that there are 9 items. If you want to just dog-ear that page or mark it or something, we'll come back there periodically as I walk through this. You'll see that our first exception request is for $1.4 million, and that has to do with the Federal Help America Vote Act. You'll see the details of that over on page 22, if you might like to go there. And just as a reminder, as you asked, the Help America Vote Act was the big federal legislation that came after the issues 12 or 14 years ago in Florida. And there was large federal legislation that came in 2002 and then was implemented in 3 and 4. And states each receive some funding to meet the 13 requirements of HAVA. And we've been doing that over the last few years. And we did everything from place equipment in the counties to meet the requirements there for accessible equipment to having a statewide voter registration system. And so what we're talking about here today is that we have continued on with our statewide voter registration system. It's not a program, actually, that helps the operation of the agency per se. Rather, it's part of the federal program that helps with the conduct of the election. You might recall that it ties into the Department of Transportation to do record check against driver's license. Also ties into the Department of Health to make sure that someone isn't deceased and still on the voter registration list. And in with DCI to check to see if there are any felons. So it's a very intricate system required by the feds. And I'm actually proud of the fact that we...
Senator Meyer has a question for you.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, do we go across state lines so we don't have somebody come in here, register, and then vote in South Dakota or something?
Mr. Chairman, that actually is not part of the Help America Vote Act requirement. So that's not built into our voter registration system. There are states that do check across state lines, and we share databases, and we have been looking into that. We're a little bit different than some of the other states because we have same-day voter registration, but we also are exempt from NVRA, the National Voter Registration Act, which is great because we are allowed actually to purge our lists more often. You might remember that after you, if you don't vote in a general election, before we were to take you off the voter registration list, you would receive a notification from us saying we noticed you didn't vote. Do you want to remain on the voter registration list? Or if we don't hear back from you, that's how we purge that list to keep it a lot cleaner and a lot more current. Other states under NVRA have more have different rules about that, and their lists aren't as clean. So we have not gone into a consortium or anything with other states to see if there are any duplicates across state lines. However, I will tell you that there have been very few prosecutions of issues with election fraud or anything like that, but one of them happened to be across the state line, and it's very interesting in Wyoming that we know each other so much that it was a report that someone had voted absentee in Wyoming and then had moved to Utah and voted again. And that case actually was prosecuted, so that was kind of interesting that we know our neighbors well enough to know that that might occur.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I bring it up is that I worked on a Senate campaign in South Dakota one time, and one particular party brought in about 5,000 political workers. They all registered in that state. They all voted in that state. Then they all went back home. And... now, I can't tell you whether they voted in that state or not, too, but I'm just thinking, you know, that's something that could happen in Wyoming real easy because we have same-day voting registration, and I've heard of that happening in different races as far as outsiders coming in and registering this day on that day and voting and affecting races. And, you know, to me, I think that's something that really... something we need to stop. I mean, I don't like anything like that myself. It's just not fair play, you know. So I don't know what we can or can't do, Pat, and maybe we'll discuss it sometime. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Chairman, just as a follow-up, there have been discussions at the national level of trying to tie all the voter registration systems from state to state in with each other, but technologically that's a big deal, but I think it warrants further discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess we'll get back on the budget here in a minute, but just carrying on, Senator Meyer, though, I mean, some states have gotten, you know,
IDs and all those kind of things. And I know I brought that bill one time, and folks from your office weren't too wild about it, frankly. But there might be some low-tech ways to kind of prevent what the senator's talking about. And I think we ought to all think about that. Because our state's becoming, you know, every vote counts anymore, as we know. Every electoral vote counts. So, okay. That's enough editorial. There's not a question in that. Okay, carry on. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Still on page 22 then, talking about the exception budget for the Help America Vote Act. The funds that we did receive, we have stretched over the last 11 years, and this requirement to still have a statewide voter registration is still required by the federal government, and yet they are not continuing to fund that. So thus, the exception budget that we have before you.
Mr. Chairman, along that same line, and they ended in 2011, so 12, 13, and 14, what you've done is you've taken the money that they had given you before and stretched it over that three-year period, and that's how you were able to fund it. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, actually, they gave us the funds in started the funds in 2004, and they gave us small amounts of money after that. So we have taken the allotment that they gave us in the Help America Vote Act of 2002, and it started in 2004, and we've stretched that over about 11 years, actually.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, even though they stopped in 11, that's what your narrative says, you still had enough money to continue it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly right.
And then the way you came up with $1,470,000 is based on the ongoing expenses you were able to see because of the track record of 11 years of operating. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. And what we did is you may want to know that about a year ago we knew this would be the case, that we were out of federal funds, and so we've been working with the CIO's office, and we met with Flint Waters. And we asked him to take a look at how we have it set up, our program, how we have it hosted, where we have it hosted, all those things. And we asked him if they could bring it back in state. We'd be willing to do that. But it is a pretty intricate program, and it's one that's very redundant. You can't have it be down around Election Day. It has to be up and running, so it has built-in safeguards. But we asked if he and his crew would take a look at that, and they did. They did a nice job reviewing that. But their recommendation was that we just leave it hosted where it is now, that it is set and nicely secure, and that they were not able to bring it in state at this point in time. And we also asked them to take a look at our contract to see if we could do a better job with how we were contracting for that. And they said they thought we had negotiated a very good contract, and they would leave it alone.
Mr. Chairman?
So,
Go ahead.
The exception is essentially the contract with the private contractor to take that on and to maintain the hosting or improve it, or just let us help me understand that number.
Mr. Chairman, that is to continue the hosting that we have in place now. We have this hosted at a hosting center out of state. It is redundant. It has duplicate things like duplicate electricity, duplicate internet providers, et cetera, just so that we would not be down at critical times. And this exception budget is to continue, not to expand it, just to continue what has been going on in the past to keep our voter registration system hosted.
Mr. Co-Chair, yeah. Did you do an RFP and go out to several vendors for that, or how did you come up? You know, it seems to me a way a lot of times it works when you bid these, they go look and see how much is appropriated, and then that's their bid. And so I'm just curious as to how you came up with the number. And then the other question is, what if you were short $200,000 or $300,000, they couldn't perform, so then we're a violation, and so then we'd be in trouble, and I'm sure there's a lot of things they would do to us in that regard.
Mr. Chairman, both questions. So originally, how this was organized was we went out, as most states did, and tried to find vendors that were willing to build and to host voter registration systems. And at the time, there were very few vendors in this country that had any idea how to do a statewide voter registration system because they hadn't been hadn't been done. And so we went through a very painful process, actually. We started when Joe Meyer was Secretary of State, and you might recall we went with a large technology company that started our voter registration project, and that actually failed, and they had taken on a few states to do that, and it had failed, and we actually had a contract whereby we received our funds back, and so we had to start again, and we went with a second company, a company called Sabre, and they are the ones who finally built it, got it in place, et cetera, and that was all done through a bid process and all that. But there were very few companies to choose from. In fact, most of them didn't want to come to Wyoming because everybody had an RFP out at the same time because the Help America Vote funds came to every state at the same time, and we were pretty small potatoes to get into the running to have a voter registration system built. That was then bought out by Hewlett-Packard for a while, and then we went back with this current company that we have now. There are very few to choose from.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, then you really didn't have a bidding process. You have somebody that's already doing it, and you negotiated a price, and that's the number we came up with?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, this time that's true. Originally, when we built it, it was bid.
Okay. Hey, Mr. Chairman and Deputy Art, going forward, what's anticipated? Is it anticipated that this will last us another couple biennium, or that, you know, are we getting close to the point where we're going to have to do a, you know, a new system or a new rebuild? Where are we in the life cycle of this system?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, I actually think we're in pretty good shape. The system, we have just migrated to a cloud system, which is much more modern technology. We had it obviously 10 years ago. It was or 14 years ago. It was a different setup on servers. Now it's into a cloud technology, which is more current. That the hosting of it in that new environment is built into the price of this. I expect that this will continue on into the future because you will have to have a voter registration system that meets Department of Justice requirements. So I do believe that this will be needed biennium after biennium. But the technology setup that we have, I do not believe that will have to be replaced. I think it will continue to be hosted as it is for at least in the foreseeable future.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up. What's the term of our current contract? Is it through the biennium?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we always do it through the biennium. We can't technically contract beyond a biennium, but we usually ask for pricing that goes beyond a biennium so that we know that it will not increase dramatically at the end of a biennium. We usually ask for a 4 to 6 year pricing, but we can only contract a biennium at a time.
Okay. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you. So is my understanding then that the $1.47 million only provides you with what we need for the next biennium, and this will become part of your standard budget after that. And so, we're paying them $1.7 million every 2 years to continue the HABA operational. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, unless at some point in time we can bring it back in state. But at this point, it doesn't seem like we're situated for that.
Thank you.
Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, my question ties in with that then. If Flint and his agency were given enough notice, could we eventually bring it back in state with a game plan? That's 1.4 headed out of the state.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's exactly the question that we asked the CIO. And at this point in time, he didn't think that he could match the setup that we have, even with funds going to him, this type of funds going to him. I do think that the ETS folks are looking at things like this over the long haul, and I think they're hopeful that they could bring some things of this level back in state. But for this two-year period, ETS didn't think so. Mr. Chairman, I think we left one question on the table that I didn't answer, and that was Senator Bebout's question about Department of Justice and what happens if we don't do this, et cetera. And, yes, Senator, that's the case. I mean, it is required by the Help America Vote Act. The Department of Justice does oversee all the states, their voter registration systems, what types of equipment are in the polling place, anything to do with the Help America Vote Act. There are 14 things, including provisional ballots and all these other things that came with that law. And so if we were to fail in any of those areas, then, and as other some other states have done, then the Department of Justice is fairly quick to file suit.
Okay, Senator Nick.
Thank you. One more follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Does the contract that you have with these folks, is it, for example, if it goes up in 2 years and you put it out to bid and another three companies decide they want to bid on it, does it protect us from proprietary information so that that information will treaty transfer to a new contract versus being tied to one company after 2 years or 4 years or whatever it is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, actually, as I said, we ask for a rate structure so they can't hang us out there after 2 years. I mean, we would still be able to have a rate very similar to this over the long haul. But if we were to choose to go with another company or get a better deal or something like that, then there are a couple of provisions in that contract. One of them is a transition provision that says that the company actually has to help us transition to a new company, and that there are provisions, as there are in almost all the Attorney General technology contracts, that the information that we have that's proprietary remains with us.
One other question. So with the vendor that we have, you said this is cloud-based, and so have you guys looked at the financial solvency or the financial strength of this company to make sure that that cloud doesn't evaporate on us?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, yes. Actually, we have, and they are required to they post a bond, and there are other requirements in that contract to make sure that things don't go belly up on us. And it's a pretty strict and structured contract. It's probably the strictest contract we have just because of the nature that it's elections, and it can't go wrong in August of November of an election year. So it's pretty tightly structured. Okay, Mr. Chairman, then I think I would take us back to page 12. And we'll look at some of the other exceptions, and probably the best way to do this is the next item is going to be technology, and not only maintenance agreements, but I'll tie that in with the technical hardware and software, so I'll do priorities 2, 4, and 5 together. You'll see that the maintenance agreements is $517,000. We're asking for $107,000 in hardware, and the software updates of $43,000. And all of these, as you probably know, all of these had to go through the business case analysis and through ETS and be signed off on by the CIO's office and is recommending approval. I can point out to you what some of these are, though. If you go to page 25, about halfway down the page, you'll see a paragraph that starts with changes in state government's methods. Probably the three largest pieces of this technology exception budget that we're asking for, and now this is the technology to run our own agency. I'm off the Help America Vote Act. This is just running the Secretary of State's office technology. And three of the largest exception budgets or requests are $220,000, and that is for our EFS system. Some of you might be familiar with that. That's called that's effective financing statements. That's of most interest to bankers and lending organizations, and primarily agricultural equipment. So someone gets a harvester or something and finances it, then it's going to be an EFS filing. And that right now is housed on the mainframe computer and down the street here at the Emerson Building. And we're satisfied with that. But it's our understanding that the ETS would like to get off the mainframe computer, and so I think you're going to hear that when they come before you.
that it's time to fold up the mainframe. It's an old system. It's serviced us very well. But if indeed they do shut down the mainframe system, then we need to bring this over into some other type of a structure. And the most efficient way to do that is probably to build a module on our uniform commercial code system that we already have up and running, and we could do that for about $220,000. If the mainframe stays up and running, these funds are not necessary for us. If the mainframe does indeed shut down, we have to take this system somewhere, and we estimate that it would be $220,000 to do that. The paragraph that begins Wyoming's voter registration system, I talked to you about the hosting of it. These funds here, $200,000, this is the maintenance of the software. And so there's always a need to upgrade your software. There are issues that you find whenever a statutory change is made or something like that, then you need to make edits into the software, and that's what that is for. And the third piece there, during the 2013 legislative session, if you see that paragraph, we've asked for $97,000 in our exception budget there. What this is for is deferred maintenance, and I'll explain the situation that drove this. In the last legislative session, there were a number of bills that were proposed, and we were asked to write fiscal notes on them, and we did so. But some of the bills passed with no appropriation, so then we were like, okay, the bills passed. We need to do this work. The money has to come from somewhere. So we took it from our maintenance fund, and we did indeed do the work that was asked of us through the bills that passed, but we deferred some of the maintenance on the programs that we had going. And so we're asking for $97,000 now to do that maintenance that had been in the planning and had been deferred.
Mr. Co-Chair, what are those two pieces of legislation?
They were both.
There it is.
Now?
Yep.
Better. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the two pieces of legislation were the UCC's revised Article 9 legislation that passed in the 2013 session, and there was also a piece of legislation affecting campaign finance that Representative Stephson had sponsored that will go into effect January of 2015. And those two pieces of legislation amounted to $97,000, did not have a fiscal note associated to it.
So then... procedurally, though, they request a fiscal note when we pass, you know, when legislation goes through the process. Did they come in late and you didn't have a chance to do it, or they just did not even call you or let you know it was coming, so you had no opportunity to put your comments in? Is that what happened? I mean, we have a procedure in where we're supposed to get the fiscal note from agencies when we ask you to do things, and evidently it didn't happen here. I'm just wondering why. Although Representative Stubson just sometimes brings bills in at the last minute. Maybe he could answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, actually, I think everybody obeyed the process. I think the bill came in at a normal amount of time, and we indeed did do our fiscal note, and it was sent in, and I believe the fiscal note was attached to the bill, but somewhere in the process it didn't get appropriated. And so the money was indicated, but it didn't come to us. So then the bill passed, and it was like, okay, the bill passed, so we better take the money from somewhere to get it done.
The other question, Mr. Co-Chair, is on the $200,000 before there again. It has to do. Is there any double dipping, so to speak, with the HAVA and this one, the Help America Voting Act? Since it's already in there and we're doing $1.5 million, can you ask them to do this in the same time as the other, or are there different functions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, they're different things. They're just broken out here because of the way we do the budget building, but the $1.5 million is for the hosting, to host it, to keep the hardware up and running, to have the system going. This money here is for software. It's the maintenance of the program itself or edits to the program. They're two different things.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if you go back to page 12, item 6, non-funded legislative directives, is the next thing I'd like to speak about. That's $175,000, and I'll take you to page 31. We just finished discussing what to do with the legislation that passes with a fiscal note but isn't appropriated. And since it happened last legislative session, we put some funds in this biennium in anticipation of that potentially happening again, because we didn't want to defer already deferred maintenance on some of the systems that we have. So, frankly, how we came up with that $175,000 was that we just based that on what took place last year. At one point in time, there was $175,000 worth of legislation on the table with fiscal notes outstanding, and then $97,000 of that passed, as I just explained to you. So this time, in anticipation of that potentially happening again, we put in $175,000 saying if that takes place, we need to have funds to do that. It's interesting, actually, that we have been generating fiscal notes for this upcoming session, and already there are fiscal notes outstanding of $435,000 of bills that have been presented to us. So that's something out there for your discussion. I don't know how this is going to be handled going forward, but we put it in our budget to have discussion about this, because if the fiscal notes are going to be written but then not appropriated, we somehow have to anticipate what's coming so that we can obey when it passes.
Yeah, but Mr. Co-Chair, I think we're starting down a slippery slope if we start doing that. Because, I mean, then pretty soon every agency will start having requesting money based on what we think might happen. And that's not the way the process was set up to work. I mean, it really works that if you're asking you to do more, you make your case, and it's up to the sponsor to ensure that that money stays. But if we start doing this, then it'll be like, well, we get the money to another budget, another place, and I'm not sure that that's something we want to do.
Mr. Chairman, I know we had discussion when we were at the governor's office about this, too, as to how we would handle this. So I hear what you're saying. We had talked about maybe there just needed to be a fund and what wasn't used reverts or something, because the intent is not to just put money in there and there it is. It's to stand ready to do what we're asked to do. So that's the intent.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, it seems to me that, I mean, what that is that just falls back on us to make sure that when we see that stuff come through, we need to jump up and make sure these requests get to appropriation. So that's a question, I think, of legislative discipline as opposed, because you're right, it's putting you in an impossible situation. And so, but that's a matter of legislative discipline that needs to occur as opposed to budgeting. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if we look back on page 12, we'll see that the next item, number 7, is a legal fund. And I'll refer you to it, the Mr. amount where...
Yeah. Mr. Co-Chair, though, we skipped the positions. Are you going through them 1 through 7?
We did.
Want me to take them and go back to 3?
You know, what we've been doing, and yours isn't that long of a... We'll want to make sure we flip through this so we see every unit budget. Okay. I mean, there'll be questions, maybe a standard budget items in a unit still. And at least give members a chance to look at that and do that. So anyway, however you want to proceed, we want to do one last flip through for sure.
Mr. Chairman, why don't I start that now? I'll just point out the ones that I have done, and then I'll go in instead of priority order that's
sure.
on here. I'll just
we,
go
the
through priority's the budget
already
book.
In there. You bet. We know the priority, and you bet.
Okay. Then we went through page 22, the Help America Vote Act. Then we talked about the technology exception budget, which had the EFS off the mainframe, and that's on page 25. We talked about the maintenance for WildReg and the $97,000 because of the fiscal notes that weren't appropriated. And then I'll go next then to page 27. And this is priority three, which has to do with positions. And, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this is about the hottest topic we have and probably the one I'm most passionate about. It would be the agencies. If we didn't have to comply with the federal aspect, this would be our agency's number one priority, and it's our greatest need. And I believe the best way to explain this is it's my understanding that you have been handed, we sent up ahead of time, a chart, and I believe it should be with your budget book. If it is not, we brought extra copies for you. Do you have that?
Yeah, we've got it electronically probably. And
would you like a hard copy? We have extras.
A hard copy. No, I think we all have them in our
Okay.
tray.
Okay. If you have this chart before you, I'd like you to look at the what this is the statistics from our business division from 1996 to 2013. And there's a couple reasons we chose that time frame. We had comparable statistics over that period of time, which is one reason. And honestly, the second reason is that's about how long I've been with this agency, and so I could really specifically speak over that time period as to what had happened here. So the business division revenue over that period of time goes back to the question that Senator Perkins has asked. In 1996, our revenue was about $4.5 million. And today, our revenue is about $15 million, and that's per year, not per biennium, $15 million a year. And over that same period of time, you'll see at the bottom that we did this in 96 with 8 employees, and today we have increased by 2. We only have 10 employees. And you can see that the amount of work is about 4 times as much. And it is actually 4 times as much work because our fees over that period of time have substantially remained the same. So it's not due to the fact that there have been a few large payments. It actually comes into us at $50 and $100 increments for most of our filings. So it really does show the volume of work that's being done. At the bottom chart shows that, too, that goes a little further. These are the active business registrations over the last 17 years. In 96, there were about 64,000 businesses registered in our state, and now we have over 174,000. And part of that's a really good thing. I mean, we're a business-friendly state. That's what we pride ourselves on, and we would like to stay that way. For each of these 174,000 companies, you have to do something for them, though. You're doing a filing, you're doing a UCC, they're sending in some type of an amendment, they're sending in some type of a change or the like. And we're required, and I'm glad we do this in a 5-day turnaround time. We have a statutorily required 5-day turnaround, and I think that's another thing that keeps us very business friendly. And how we've even been able to do this, really, you'd look at this and go, well, how did you go from 64,000 of these filings to 174,000 and do it with very little staff growth? It's what our discussion was previously. I think we've done a really nice job technologically. We've put a lot of our annual reports online. People have been able to use that and file through the Internet. And so we've been able to handle some of our growth that way. We've maximized some efficiencies. And then, candidly, the other thing we've been doing really in the last year is we're stealing from other staff and other divisions to keep us at the 5-day deadline. Sometimes we'll get a number of filings at once. Mondays are the worst, frankly. And I frequently am pulling people off securities audits. I'm pulling them away from commercial registered agent work and the like, and I just shift them over and ask them to do some filings to keep us within the 5-day turnaround time. We did also look at, getting back to Senator Perkins' original question, we did really look at could we take another big move technologically, and the biggest one that people ask us about is could we file online? Could we do corporate formations, nonprofit formations, and the like online? Probably the best state in terms of having a nice system to do that is to the south here is Colorado. They did spend $8 million on their system. They're at well over $12 million in what they've spent on it now, and it's a very expensive system, is my understanding, to keep going. Did not seem like the time to come in to ask for $8 or $12 million, so it seemed like a better thing to come in and say, we really need two staff to keep us ahead of the game so that we can get the filings done appropriately and have them handled with some semblance of customer service. The volume, as you can see, is exploding. I don't think it will taper off. There's really no reason to believe that it will. It's just continued to climb. And frankly, I think our agency is very proud of that. We're known as being a really business-friendly place. Delaware has tax laws that really drive a lot of business to Delaware. But other than Delaware, we're kind of the prime place to file. Nevada used to be, but they had raised their fees at one point, and a lot of their filings are now coming over to us. So we would like to continue being business-friendly. We would not like to lose that edge, because if people do stop filing with us, obviously the income line flattens out or goes down. We're well aware this isn't a popular topic to bring before you, but it's a truthful topic. We're just telling it like it is. This is where it's at. I think the chart speaks for itself. The governor called it compelling. I'm happy to answer questions, but I'm not sure what more I can say about that.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Burke.
To the charts that you've got right here is you've got this, you've got these charts are showing just linear progressions on the lines, and is that just because that's where you were in 1996 and that's where you were in 2013, that's just the line, or is the growth year over year really right along that kind of linear progression?
Mr. Chairman, actually that's a great question. We could show it more like a stock market chart, but we just did a regression line. But it did grow pretty steadily. There are some years that are a little up or a little down, but mostly it's a fairly steady increase over that period of time.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, if I can follow up. Just so you know, I mean, that's an average of, if you take the $15,338,000 and divide it by the 174,000 filings, that's a, Mr. Chairman, that's a basically just a hair short of $88 a filing, so we're getting it a nickel at a time. So,
yeah. Senator Meyer.
Okay, we got two new people coming in. You got any place to put them, or what's your physical restraints?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, all we asked for in this budget was salary and benefits, just the people. As far as where to put them, we talked about that. We don't have a lot of space. We'd probably give up our conference room, frankly. Many of you know how our business division is set up, and then there's a little conference room right next to it. We could fit two people in there. As for their supplies, so to speak, we'd probably do what we did with most of our furniture in the past. We just go to surplus, and either federal surplus or state surplus, and get the furniture that we need. As far as they need computers, so as far as computers go, that'd be our biggest capital outlay. But computers now, you're probably looking at $2,500 a piece or something, and so we feel like that could come out of our operating expenses. It's the people themselves, and we'll probably give up the conference room to put them somewhere.
Mr. Chairman, just to summarize, then, so you're providing $16 million more in revenues from 10 years ago with the same people. And so we're going to get the benefit of the $16 million in revenues, and you're asking for two people to be able to do it properly.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And how long, what do you anticipate, is that going to last for, I mean, it's hard to guesstimate, but if you stay flat where we are, we should be in good shape then, right?
Mr. Chairman, I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't say that we're going to be super flush and have a lot of gap for the future. In fact, when I was asked how many people did I think we need, I thought we needed more than two people, but I thought it was ridiculous to come here and ask for more than two.
We could have said no, and we'd have been at two.
That's 20 years of experience.
But I do think that two people will get us still being business friendly. Now, where will the growth go is the question. You know, will the growth stay steady like this? Will it get higher? It kind of depends what other states do sometimes. If other states raise fees, we get more business. There are a number of things like that that are variables that you can't predict, but I think two people would get us in good stead, but not with a lot of overhead space.
Mr. Chairman? Have you done, I mean, when you go back and look at that, and taking us back to if we upgraded to do online filings, what kind of analysis, I mean, ultimately you would think that if we could do that online that would decrease the workload. It may not save us positions. It probably will. It will over the long run. But initially, you wouldn't necessarily anticipate a decrease in positions. But have you done any analysis to see if that how that would be reflected as far as potential or the need for staff growth in the corporation's division going forward?
Mr. Chairman, actually, we have had discussion about that, Senator, because we have a little microcosm of that when we went with annual reports online. Okay, so when we went with annual reports online, it did cut down some of the paper that you have to touch. Okay, and so it gives you a little bit of slack in there. It's a lot nicer now dealing with things that are filed online than it is when you have to open the mail and do paperwork. However, it doesn't necessarily all process itself. So everybody's using a credit card. You have to do reconciliation of the credit card payments coming in, and you have to look at the annual reports and they process them online, but you have to still check them. Yep, they're good to go, and say yes to them. So it speeds up the process, but it doesn't take the entirety of the work away. So what I would say, if you extrapolated that to having a formation online would be a great thing. And it would really give better customer service, I think, faster customer service. You know, it's same day. It's not waiting 5 days to form. So it's good for all those reasons. And then it would, I believe, give us some overhead over time. But there are still things that have to happen. That phone rings all day long. People don't necessarily know how to just go on a system and go, oh, I think I'll form a company. Loads of people want to call and talk to a human being and find out how they should form their company and those kinds of things. So I do think filing will help. Electronic filing of formations would be great and really help. I don't know how far down it would drive it. There's still services to be done, but I do think for sure it gives better service.
Okay, continue.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, then I will take us to, I had already talked about some of the hardware, software, and maintenance items for technology. So since I'm taking this in the order of your book here, I would take you over to page 28 and the technology hardware that we were asking for the next biennium was $107,000. It is what I would call, I guess, routine hardware upgrades, computers, and those types of things. And those were all processed, as I said before, through the CIO's office with a business case plan of why we needed them. They include the regular things like computers and printers and those types of things.
What are they asking?
Then if you proceed over to page 30, you will see that's priority 5 with the software requirements. Those two have been discussed through the CIO's office, gone through the proper process for that, and you'll just see a listing of all the types of software that we use there, everything from Adobe and Active Report software and the like. Those are the things that we would be updating and upgrading. That's $43,000 for the biennium. And the CIO's recommendation was yes to that. Then we went on page 31.
Mr. Co-Chair,
yes.
To go back on the computer equipment.
Sure.
In an iPad 3, you want to go to, what are we doing here? I mean, I've got some of my computers that I'm still using Microsoft 03, and it works fine. What are you laughing at, Senator Perkins? Anyway, what are we doing here with iPad 3s? What do we have for the legislature? What are those? That, are we iPad 3s, 2s, 1s? Where are we?
Mr. Chairman, you have a combination. I won't point out, but some of you have iPads 2s, some have iPad 3.
And you do not have any? You have all iPad 1s or not even iPads?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I'll ask Director Byrne to give you an overview of exactly what we own, but we do have some iPads in our agency right now, and we use those and some laptops because we're on the road pretty frequently, so we don't just use a workstation. Our secretary reminds us he's the Secretary of State, not the Secretary of Cheyenne, so we're out and about quite a bit, but we do go out for pertinent things. For reviewing securities, when we do securities audits, we're out and about and we're looking at commercial registered agent audits. And then, of course, we do go and meet with county elected officials, county clerks, et cetera. And so but that's mostly the types of equipment that we take with us when we're traveling. If we have them, then we use them around the Capitol as well when we're at meetings for taking notes and those kinds of things. And I think what you'll hear for these upgrades is for the ones we have. We're not looking to expand here. For the ones we have over the course of the next biennium, the recommendation was they'll only last so long, and then it's time to figure in the upgrades to the next ones. I can have Director Byrne answer that further if you'd like.
So the iPads, are they, I mean, does it have some special software, or is it simply just a word processor when you're on the road, basically?
Mr. Chairman, we utilize the iPad in our office similar to how you might utilize a laptop. We do purchase apps from the Apple App Store to be able to do word processing, et cetera. And the apps themselves are relatively inexpensive, and that's actually not even part of this budget request. But due to normal wear and tear on any piece of hardware, for example, if you drop an iPad, oftentimes the glass front will just shatter. In that case, that particular device would need to be replaced. And this specific line item is simply providing the mechanism by which to replace these devices if and when the time is it comes.
Okay, just any more questions on the tech request? Go ahead, Representative Walz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is on the software requirements, so that might be a slightly different topic. And I just wanted to know, I noted that Adobe, which is pricier, I know that you noted that it's switching from that kind of suite licensing to subscription licenses. And I'm just curious, what's the difference? Is there a cost savings in going that route?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
My estimate for this was presented to the CIO's office in July, and at that time they were just beginning to look at the subscription services. So I'd have to look specific to my estimate to make the determination as to whether that was for the subscription or for flat-out licensing. My instinct on it is it was just for flat-out licensing because they were still in the development stages of that subscription service. At this point, I can't answer your question.
Okay, I just had a question, Deputy, or back to the salaries on the two new positions, just request positions. So what kind of, they're not entry level, it looks like. I mean, are there, what kind of degree, what kind of background? There's $70,000 salaries to start.
I'll just give an overview.
Well, so it's $140,000 for salaries for two positions.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, actually, these are not very high level positions. These folks are business registrars, they make about $30,000 a year. What you see in the budget there is going to be two positions, biennium, salary, plus benefits.
Benefits are higher than a salary, really. Okay, good. Thank you. I was just curious. I forgot the biennialization there. Yeah, no kidding. All right. Okay, please proceed.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think we were on page 31. And we had discussion already about the $175,000 just going forward, or what we were going to do about bills that come without appropriation. We've already had discussion about that. And so where we are now is on page 33. And this is our exception budget request that we've titled Legal Fund. And honestly, we really didn't know what to do with this, so we're bringing this issue before you. This has to do with lawsuits that are filed against the Secretary of State by virtue of his office being the chief state election official. These are not lawsuits that come to us based on misconduct. And I can give you two examples. We've had two this year. The Attorney General's office always represents us in terms of attorneys representing us. But then there are costs to these suits. So if you go into depositions or you're hiring court reporters or those kinds of things, that cost is passed back to the agency. And so we've had two of them. One was the redistricting lawsuit. So there were, as you know, complaints about the redistricting, but the lawsuit itself came against the Secretary of State as the chief state's election official, even though we had zero to do with the redistricting itself, and that one's still pending. But any costs for that, depositions, et cetera, then the bill gets sent over to our agency. And the second one that we've had this year is a suit that followed Senate File 104 referendum. As you know, there was a referendum, and then following that referendum that was not successful, there was a dislike of one of the statutory provisions, and so the lawsuit came against us. And so there are costs to that that we weren't budgeted for. And so we had discussion with the governor, and we're not sure that we care that the dollars go into our budget, but there needs to be some type of a fund or something so that when lawsuits like this come to us, there is some mechanism to pay. Like we've had days of depositions, and so then that really takes it to our current budget because there's no appropriation for that. And so that's why we're bringing this forward. It doesn't seem that it's likely that this type of activity is going to end anytime soon. And we would suggest that whatever funds come, that they be designated, that they would revert if they were not used specifically for lawsuit activities.
Continue, seeing no questions.
Okay. Page 34, this is in, I believe, four of the elected officials' budget. The governor has it in his, too, in a little bit different way. But this is $15,000 transition funds if there is a new Secretary of State elected. And you might recall that every 4 years, every other biennium, $15,000 goes into every elected official's budget as an exception. And that is so if a new elected official is elected, it covers things like new letterhead for them, clerical services to help them from the election in November until January when they take office. And it's always set up so that it reverts if to the general fund if there is not an elected official newly elected. That's what it has to do with. You'll see it in all four of the elected officials' budgets. Okay. The last thing in our exception budgets is on page 43. This is not general fund money, and Kelly alluded to this at the beginning. This is the Bucking Horse and Rider Fund, and I'd like to go back to Representative Moniz's question about this and how does this interface with the University of Wyoming. We had $200,200 worth of spending authority and from way back when. And now we have a memorandum of understanding with the university. We really work closely with them because there's no sense in us running over the top of each other. The Secretary of State owns all of the federal trademarks on the Bucking Horse and Rider for the state of Wyoming. And so we're the ownership of it, and we deal with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to protect and keep that registered trademark in a number of trademark categories. And then we do an arrangement back to the University of Wyoming, and frankly to many businesses and entities throughout Wyoming. You see the bucking horse used on lots of things. We do either a license or a business use agreement back with those businesses in order to use the mark. And those arrangements basically say that they understand they don't own the mark. State of Wyoming owns the mark, but they are allowed to use it. But the University of Wyoming has a trademark license office, and frankly, they do just a great job. They're out patrolling the marketplace. They're promoting the sales of product with the bucking horse and rider on it. So we don't duplicate that. We go into an arrangement with them to pay attention to what's going on in the marketplace. And we put our attention on the legal end of it with the federal filings, et cetera. So when royalties come in, we collect royalties off that mark. The royalties primarily go to the University of Wyoming. And only a small portion comes to us because, frankly, they're doing the bulk of the work. And we only need a small portion of the money to keep current on all our registrations. And so we're asking that if you want to do a negative exception budget request here, we only need to have about $20,000 worth of spending authority. We don't need $200,000 worth of spending authority. But that's the reason why it has morphed over time. There was a point in time where we collected a lot of royalty. Now it diverts to the university to do the boots on the ground type of work. And Mr. Chairman, that's actually the end of our request, but the governor's office suggested that maybe I speak with you, if it's okay, about state agency rules. And you may have heard, I don't know if he presented in his budget or not, but that they would like to do some things with state agency rules and designate some funds there. So they asked if I would be willing to speak to that a little bit, since we're the agency that's keeper of the state agency rules. Would you want me to do that?
Sure.
Okay. What this has to do with is the governor started about a year or so ago on a rules project, and the goal of the governor's office, and we've been working along with them, is to work with the cabinet to reduce the number of rules that are out there. If they were old or obsolete, to go back and just try to clean up a lot of things and get rules off the books that were no longer necessary. And I think from the outside looking in, being on that committee, I think a number of the cabinet officials have done a really nice job with that and have trimmed down their rules. And then in addition to that, to try as they were going through those rules to make them more understandable and put them more in layperson terms and not repeating statutory language and the like. And so that process has been going on and will continue to go on. That project's still underway. And then in the process of doing that, everybody was taking a look at the filing system that we had where we file the state agency's rules. And we are in agreement as we look at that system that it is pretty old and archaic. It was awesome when we built it, but we built it about 15 years ago, and it was a little access database. Well, nobody's happy with a little access database anymore. They want it to be very searchable. And so the governor's plan was to take, I believe, the $125,000 that had been appropriated last time to work on this rules project. It wasn't spent. And then combine that $125,000 of unspent funds with some other dollars that he had in his budget, I think about $600,000, and to ask that that be made available to revamp and rebuild the entire rules filing system. And the idea behind this, I believe, is what folks really want is that right now the filing system will tell you what the current rules are, and they'll tell you you can go back and look in archives and find out what used to be. But what people really want is the notice of rules that are going to be out there and then the proposed rules so that folks can see, hey, what's upcoming? What are these rules like? And can have better opportunity to comment back on agencies' rules. They also have the current and the archive rules and have a really powerful, this is where the cost comes in, frankly, to have a really powerful search engine so that it's easy for the common man, the public, to put in words and topics that they could find rules on those things. Because, as you know, rules don't always fall like within one agency. There might be rules about water and DEQ and rules about water and a lot of different agencies, and people might want to be able to better find that. So it's not in our budget. It's really the governor's project, although we've been really working closely with him on that, and I'm happy to answer questions about state agency rules if you want to, but they asked me to comment on that since it'll overlap with us.
Okay. Brett, I think, has a comment. I'm going to break in this new technology, this new Brett-proof mic.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on what Deputy Arp said, the governor is proposing to carry forward the $125,000 general fund appropriation to his office for this purpose. Additionally, he is also recommending a little over $692,000 from the SIPA account to complement that original appropriation to accomplish what I believe is in the intent is to do this in a couple of different phases, I believe, and to work with the Secretary of State's office to do that.
Okay. Was there a question? Representative Stubbs.
Mr. Chairman and Deputy Arp, just on the, and maybe Brett's the better source, but on the cost of that, that, you know, as we're looking at $1.4 million or whatever just to host the other system we were talking about, it seems like a redesign of a searchable rules and reg database that $600,000, $700,000 is pretty light. And have you gone out and seen, done any investigation into that cost to and I fully endorse, it's a great idea to even, heck with laymen, I mean, as a lawyer trying to navigate through those rules, it's almost impossible. So I certainly support the approach, but is that going to be enough to make significant steps in that direction?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, well, it depends, I suppose, on whether this project grows, you know, because as people are saying what they want the system to do, costs can grow. So is it possible it would grow? Well, we don't know the scope of the project that we're being asked to do yet, so it's hard to definitively answer that question. However, we do know that we've built things in our agency before that require some search engines and some technology that we can probably make pretty good use of. We have the business entity program that we have component pieces of that we could probably capitalize on. And we have a different company, but we have things in both the Voter Reg and the YCFIS programs that we've built in the near recent past. So we have some knowledge and we have some vendors who have done projects within budget and have done a pretty good job for us. So if we're allowed to use some of those same component pieces and vendors, we think that this is doable. The governor's office asked us the same thing, and we said, well, given what people have talked to us about it being, which is what I just described to you, I think it's doable within those funds. Now, if people start becoming creative and want it to be more or bigger or better or something, then might be a different answer.
Any other questions? Anything else that you'd like to tell us?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think we've presented well and appreciate the questions that have been asked, and we're pleased with the reception. Thank you.
Yeah, well, we appreciate your presentation, and we'll take it up in January again when we get back. So thank you very much. I think we're going to take just a five-minute kind of stretch, walk around the room, or we have to do whatever, and we'll get right back with Madam Auditor, and we'll get going. Actually, it's pretty good for this committee. Last one of the day to only be 15 minutes off our plan. Don, good job. I think more than anything, I can speak for myself, kind of knocking the dust off here a little bit. We're not used to sitting all day, that's for sure. And that's been an adjustment today, so we've taken a few more breaks. But I would say that we want to take your budget really from the very front, and you probably have a presentation for us as educate us on really what you're doing and your initiatives. And then we want to just start right at the very beginning. So we'll look at your standard budgets of each unit as we go through to give members an opportunity to ask a question if they see something for rental. We had a question on rentals earlier and those kind of things. So, and we'll be able to see any other exception requests as you go through page by page. So that's kind of the format we'd like to follow if we could go there. So welcome. We're glad to have you. And
thank you.
The floor is yours.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman Bebald and Mr. Chairman Harshman and committee. Thank you for the opportunity to come and share our 2015-16 budget with the committee. I've always said that we're a small office with a really, really large mission. We process the payroll of over 9,000 employees monthly and pay over 800,000 payments to vendors annually. And we do this with a staff of 24 that work hard to provide great customer service. I'd like to just note a couple of items in our administration series of the SAO budget that we're pleased to share with you, that we've reduced our standard budget for the 103 series by $29,444. This savings is from agency retirements and hiring new personnel at lower salaries. In addition, our contract negotiations that we did in 2011 enabled us to reduce our request $200,000 for 2015-16. And our office will also be reverting approximately $441,000 to the general fund for 2011 and 12. We're not asking for any budget increase this year, and we also relinquished a part-time AWAC last year in last year's budget cuts. So we have many items parked within our budget that aren't necessarily our budget operations. They're for specific purposes such as brucellosis, group insurance, license recoupment, state employee retiree compensation, and the Medicaid reserve. And these budget items are not part of our budget. Director Jones is here to answer any questions that you may have specifically regarding these numbers. So with that, I'll just start going page by page of our budget. On page three, you can see it's a big summary snapshot of all of our budget. The 100 series is our operating budget. You can see there that we decreased our exception request as a negative exception request due to that $200,000 contract renegotiation. So we're actually asking for less money than we did last year. The administration, the 400 series, I believe that is the brucellosis that's parked in our budget for any outbreak that may have, any emergencies. The 1000 series is the general fund license revenue recoupment. What that is we reimburse for all of the licenses that the governor may give out during the course of the budget year, biannual budget.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Ms. Gordon.
Brucellosis, how much is left in that fund? You know how much is?
I think it's $500,000. I don't believe we've spent any. We'll have to get you that figure. I don't know.
That'll be a common question probably on all your parked accounts. Representative Wallace.
I was looking through this earlier, and I'm not sure. This is probably something simple and elementary that I'm just missing. But on the brucellosis, the governor's recommendation is that the remaining amount be reappropriated. Why doesn't that show up on this budget if that's what his recommendation is?
Brett, why don't you, and Brett's got some other information too, I think, for us, so that'd be all right, Senator. Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, there are two elements that are impacting the brucellosis appropriation within the state auditor's budget. First and foremost, when you go to that particular page in this budget book, and I don't recall exactly what it is. There is a recommendation from the governor to extend the existing appropriation, or to carry forward the existing appropriation. There have been two B-11s of those dollars in the current 13-14 biennium. One was to the Livestock Board, and one was to Game and Fish. I don't recall off the top of my head the two specific amounts for those, but I can get that information.
They were brucellosis-related, though.
They were brucellosis-related, yes, sir. So there is approximately $320,000 remaining of that appropriation in the 13-14 biennium. You may recall all half a million was remaining when we moved into the 13-14, and legislatively I think you transferred that to a new account at the Livestock Board to retain that particular appropriation. The governor also has profiled $180,000, so ultimately there will need to be a governor's letter on this on his profile to backfill that that specific appropriation of $500,000.
So just that last sentence, so let's back that up a minute. So as I read on, and it says on page, I'm looking in the budget book, page 16, that he recommends that they be, do not revert and be reappropriate for the same purpose. In this holding account here or with the Livestock Board?
I'm sorry, and that's my fault, Mr. Chairman, for how I basically explain that. He is recommending the $320,000 that remains in this appropriation be carried forward into the 15-16 biennium. Then he has also profiled $180,000 so that going into 15-16, the full half a million would remain within the state auditor's office.
Got it. So, and that'll be coming in a letter. It's not in the budget. Got it.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
I think we got it on the House side. We're a little slower on the House side, and these senators, you got to take your time with us. Okay. Any other questions on that? Representative Wallace. Good. Okay. So there's 320 left in there. That answered a couple questions. Okay. Great. Okay, Madam Auditor.
Okay. And then the next line item, 2500, is the state employee compensation for the retirees. That money is set aside for all of those retirees that retired before July 2008 to pay for their insurance payments for that. And that you can notice that it's decreasing, and the $650,000 exception request is due to more retirees either passing away. But Director Jones will can answer.
Go ahead, Brett. Probably Social Security. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this the auditor is correct. There are two ways that we fund the retiree health subsidy, and this is one of those. And this is specifically for retirees who elect to stay on the state's health insurance plan prior to July 1st of 2008. So it's a fixed group of folks who are funded through this general fund appropriation. And so as time goes on, you will continue to see this pot of money shrink. And that's what you're seeing with respect to the recommendation. So the recommendation itself does not come from the state auditor's office. I interacted with employees group insurance, talked to them about what their trending was, what their bills, what their monthly payments were into the health insurance fund associated with this, and based on the information they provided me, I'm recommending a reduction in this budget of $650,000. The second piece of that retiree health insurance is built into 100 series budgets, and that is 0.6%. That is built into object code, I believe it's 0197.
Seriously? I'm hearing like a phone or something else, or a radio. I don't know. Maybe I got voices going on. Somebody else hear that?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. So, any other questions on the retiree insurance then?
Mr. Co-Chair,
yes.
So then when we get the standard budget back for the next biennium, it'll be 4550, and then if a similar thing occurs, we'll see the reduction from the state auditors in that next budget.
And the next line item is account code 4800, and that's the Medicaid reserve, and that's $1,026,740. So that's the
Senator.
I guess kind of the same question. What did it start out to be? And
Director Jones will have to ask that. I believe it's new this year, I think.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, specifically this was, you'll notice this is not standard budget. You'll notice it's base budget. This was appropriated dollars from the current biennium. I believe within a Section 300 that was a small reserve balance that the legislature put in place for the Department of Health to tap potentially if there was a need to do so, and that did not occur.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator.
I thought we parked somewhere around 20 or 25 million someplace. Am I thinking of a previous budget or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, I think previously to that you had parked that kind of money. In this particular case, it was just this small amount of funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Page 3 is a continued summary on a high level of our expenditures. We can go further back into the detail if you like to see it in more detail on page 13 for those. And this is just for our administration on our Unit 100 for that. So I guess one thing to highlight would be our maintenance contract and our professional fees, our 901. That's our contract that we have for our financial uniform accounting system. We renegotiated that contract in 2011, and it's a 5-year term, and that will be coming up and expiring in 2016, I believe we calculated. So,
is that your only? That's your only 900 series?
We also contract out for our W-2 preparation during the year, and that's in a handout that we prepared outlining those. We outsource the W-2 preparation and the 1099 preparations, and that's an amount, a nominal amount of $15,000. So it's.
Oh, I see it. There's two of them actually there. I was looking at one.
Right.
Data Management Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the shortest 900 list I think I've ever seen. Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Who's Brett? Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm not sure where you're at. Have you wrapped up the budget itself with this agency, or are you still moving through it?
I think we're pretty close. I'm looking here, sir. I wanted us to...
At the appropriate time, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to speak to page 19, if I could do so.
I think we'll continue to flip through each page, though, and make sure. And I know we took the high-level view, but we'll just kind of scroll through as we go through. So I'm just kind of seeing where we're at here. I have us finishing up page 13 and 14 then, mm-hmm. Right?
Yes. The 200,000 negative exception request is due to the negotiation of the contract.
Right. I have that note on that. Okay. Brucellosis.
On page 15.
Page 15, we discussed that.
Mm-hmm.
And highlighted the note there. And then and group insurance recapture on page 18.
Right. There is a zeroing out of that to reconcile it of a dollar. So
this is a amount, too, I think Senator Myers was talking about. But and that's on page 19, then, where we have some bold print at the bottom on the governor's recommendation. That's where we're at. So, Brett, do you have something to add to that?
Mr. Chairman, just first of all, if I might explain page 18, and this is a quirk of the IBAR system, but essentially we have to have a number in the table in order for this to show up.
Okay.
So that explains kind of the odd-looking table on page 18. On page 19 specifically, you may recall during the supplemental, there was a recommendation from the governor to capture excess health insurance spending authority, specifically general fund spending authority, out in agencies. And as a result, legislatively, you placed a Section 300 that required the budget division, utilizing the same methodology in which we prepared the initial recommendations, to capture that excess spending authority. And we did so via the B11 process. Specifically, we captured a little over $17 million, almost $17.2 million in general fund spending authority. That $17.2 million does include funding from the judicial branch as well, and we can detail out or provide you, I believe you have copies of those B11s, but can certainly provide that information. The governor is recommending specifically that that funding be utilized to address any necessary increase in health insurance premiums that have been projected in the A&I budget. So specifically, when you get to the A&I budget, I believe tomorrow, you will note that Mr. Hayes has projected an increase in spending authority necessary in the amount of $52 million. And so specifically what has occurred here in the context of the governor's recommendation is the standard budgets for agencies represent 13-14 premium levels. And so there is no increase in health insurance spending authority related to premium increase out in standard budgets for agencies. And so the governor is recommending specifically that the funding that was captured in the last biennium be utilized to cover the cost of any potential increases in health insurance, and specifically utilizing it to cover the general fund costs associated with that. You will note reference in this narrative to that being estimated to be $14.2 million. In the last week, my division has gone back through to confirm our numbers, and actually we believe it will require a little over $14.5 million. So we did revise our estimates. We have provided that information to your staff by agency. And also as it relates to the University of Wyoming and the community colleges.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, is that 14.5, is that just for 1 year of the biennium?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, no. Our projections at this point in time are for both years of the 15-16 biennium.
So the obvious question is, why didn't we just subtract the 14.5 from the 17.7 and revert the difference?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, I think it's based on the $14.5 million is based on current projected estimates from Mr. Hayes at the Department of Administration and Information. I think the idea is that the $17.2 million will provide the necessary backstop associated with the potential need. So I want to emphasize that what we're talking about at this point in time are estimates. They're estimates based on the projected premiums that Mr. Hayes has prepared. And I think the governor's approach in this regard is an attempt to mitigate some of the problems we've had over the last two bienniums, because two bienniums ago we had a rate holiday, a two-month rate holiday, and then we had the recapture last time. And so I think there's a recognition of how difficult it is to project the second year of the biennium, and also a recognition that perhaps while those projections may continue, there's a need to us to at least examine how we actually budget for these costs. And the $17 million offered us an opportunity to at least approach this from a different perspective than what we've historically done. I know that doesn't get exactly to your question, Senator. The short answer to your question is, I think based on the fact that these all continue to be projections, there's a comfort level with leaving the full $17.2 million there.
And I understand that. Mr. Chairman, when will we know what the cost would be for for 1 year? When, and that's a question obviously for the group health insurance, but when do we know that number for sure? When does that become available to us?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, yeah. You have to quote it. And, you know, when I do my insurance for my companies, they come in, we have a 30-day period, they come in and tell us what it's going to cost, we up, we don't, and so we know what it's going to be for the following year. When does that occur for the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, rates have actually been set for and are in place for calendar year 14. Those rates, employees were notified of what those rates would be in, I believe, early November, possibly even late October. And so those rates for the that will play over into the 15-16 biennium for the first 5 months of that biennium have been established, the actual rates that are being collected.
Okay, then do you happen to know the difference, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, do you happen to know the difference between 13 and 14 calendar years, what the percent increase was? We can talk to Ralph about that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bebout, I have tracked back and looked at what some of those rates are, both with respect to what we've built into IBARS historically. I don't know that I have those percentages off the top of my head, but I know that information is available. We did a lot of review of the history on these rates, what's been budgeted, what has been actual, obviously because this has been an issue over the last couple of biennium.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Meyer, or Senator Perkins.
Thank you. When you guys went back and looked at that, you know what that's going to be, but we have, have you guys looked at it in the context of the requirements under the Affordable Care Act for this, and is that folded into your estimate, or you just don't know yet?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I'm certainly not the one to speak to that. I don't know to what degree Mr. Hayes took that into account as he constructed rates. My guess is it's too early to really be able to tell at this point in time, but he could speak far more effectively to that than I could.
Okay. Any other questions then? I think we've about got this Agency 3 wrapped up. I just had a question on the, and you have the account numbers, Brett, or Madam Auditor. You know, the 1.8 for the license recoupment. Did we spend all that, or is it enough, too much in there? We have a little experience now.
Yep, Mr. Chairman, I think we're just slightly under the 1.825 base, and that my statement there is based on the actual reimbursement request that I think the auditor's office received from Game and Fish in the not-too-distant past. I want to say the last maybe 60 or 90 days. They're required to submit a report and seek that reimbursement from the auditor's office, and I think we're just maybe just a shade under the 1.825.
There was some reversion.
Okay. Very good. All right. Any other questions? Mr. Cochier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I have is about the GEM transactions, and there was an unusual one that happened last year, has that settled out? Is there anything going on there that you're seeing that's out of the ordinary, or?
No, actually, we believe that the GEM transactions have decreased for that, and we discussed that yesterday.
And I guess the question, what do you mean increase? Just the volume or the unusualness?
In fiscal year 2012, we had 4,659 GEMs. In fiscal year 13, we had 4,356 GEMs, and they're by all different agencies, correct? These are agents, yes.
And I know that's a lot of them, Mr. Chairman, but there was one particular situation where the GEM situation was utilized to do things other than what I think it was really designed for. Was that just an isolated example, and you have not seen anything like that?
No, we have not seen anything
like
that.
That since then.
A GEM is typically the general expenditure modification, where it's correction of an error. For instance, if you were to accidentally put utilities and coded it to office supplies, then you do a GEM to correct that. It's a tool within the system to correct that sort of error or reclass it to the proper account. So we have not experienced any other issues other than normal course of business.
Mr. Chairman, what about JVAs or BGE 90Es?
Okay.
Is anything out of the ordinary going on there?
How much would you like to speak about? Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the JVAs, that's a journal voucher transaction at the state auditor's office, pretty much. They're the only agency that does that. The BGE 90Es, those are budget transactions that agencies engage in, typically to A, budget the appropriation once it's set up, or B, to go in and then make changes to their budgeted amounts once they're into their programs and operations. They may move budget from 200 series to the 600 series or whatever. The budget office then has approval over that, so they're aware of what the agency's trying to do.
Okay. I have one other question, and this is more from your experience in the private sector and being an auditor and that type of background. It seems to me when you look around the state, you know, everybody has all of these audits. You go to a community college, you have an audit for the college, you have an audit for the foundation, then you have an audit to the audit. And I mean, the amount of money we spend as a state auditing, and a lot of them you could question why we even do it. Have you even thought about maybe there's a better way of doing that relative? I mean, it's great for the CPA firms. They love it. But it's just costing us a lot of money, and I wonder what that dollar amount really is. It's into the millions, probably. And do we really need all those audits? And I know one of the things you're doing, you have an estate audit that's being conducted. You do some stuff internally, but you have an outside firm come in and look at you, too. So, you know, here you are an elected official. You've got the responsibility, yet we have to hire an auditor to tell us that you're really doing what you're already telling us. And I don't think we've ever had a non-compliance audit in that regard. Are there some things we could do to eliminate a lot of these audits?
I always try to look at cost versus benefit. And one of the questions when I'm ever asked anything like that, it's like, well, what are you doing with the audit after you receive the audit? Are you actually implementing some of the internal controls or the deficiencies that they're reporting back to you when you have the audit? Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it doesn't. We are the liaison for the audit. We do not contract with the audit. We're one of the few states, last time I checked, 13 states that actually contract, outsource that audit. Some other states have internal auditors that, you know, basically audit all year long. And when you do that, I think that you do have some opportunity to rotate around more frequently and look at areas and be a little bit more, nimble with where you're looking. The manner that we are doing it currently is working. I think that it is efficient for the amount of money that is spent for the audit, because you would need to hire a lot more auditors internally to do the job that MHP, who is our current contractor, is doing. There are opportunities within the state for our current Department of Audit, and I would invite you to speak to Ms. Director Vogel about that, because I do see areas of opportunity to go in and look not only at the taking a more proactive role in like you suggested, the community colleges, the towns, the counties, because audits are learning opportunities for the people that are the staff that's involved at these local levels. And I think there's opportunity there to not only build up those staff that are at the local level in charge of the money that we're passing through, but also to let them know that they are accountable and that there is opportunity to report back and make sure that they're spending the money appropriately. And then when you do it internally, you can look at specific areas that you want to look at as well. Now, you do have to do a financial statement for the state. You know, we could not just say, oh, I don't think that we're not going to do a CAFR anymore because I don't think that's a best use of our resources, but we have to do a CAFR by generally accepted accounting principles and GASB. We're required to report on the state as a whole. So, but there are opportunities there for increasing the oversight within the Department of Audit and help in that area with our local governments. So our office does not audit, as you all know. We're the comptroller for the state, so that would be outside of our duties and responsibilities. I hope that.
Senator Meyer. I'm just wondering, do we have a double entry system that, I mean, still 4,000 general expense modifications? Seems like, I know when we went to a double entry system on our computer, we caught the mistake when we were putting them in, you know, right away, and so it really wasn't a mistake. We caught it and did it right away. I'm just wondering what type of system we have.
Well, we have 800 users to the system, approximately 800 users. So if you really... 4,300 out of 800 users and 800,000 payments, you know, people can fat finger those numbers. We've had that happen. We've instituted a pre-audit program in our office where we go back and look at the expenditures. Every run, we pull randomly sample checks to sample, to look at the underlying source documents, make sure that what's being paid is what's being paid, and communicating that back to the agencies. And we have found errors in those numbers, and went back and made those communication with the agencies and had them, you know, corrections made. So we're trying to be more proactive, reaching out with our agencies and helping them with their jobs. So, but errors, mistakes happen in keying in those numbers. So I
Mr. Chairman, can you put that in a dollar figure as far as the 4,000 mistakes?
We didn't. We will have to get that to you. We don't have a dollar figure on that. But the double entry system, it's just moving it from one expenditure code to the other expenditure code, so the net effect is actually zero
right.
for that. So, but I can get you that dollar information, Senator Meyer.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And going back to, I wanted to ask this question after Senator Bebat brought up that on the GEMS and then the was it the GB90?
BG.
BEG 90. Thank you. On those two things, is there, and I don't know if this is the question for you or if it's the question for our good friends at A&I or maybe even, but ultimately when that happens, when that comes through, is there a criteria that we have that when that comes in, if there's something, either the amount or the frequency or the, that it creates an exception situation so that so you go and look at that more closely?
I'll have to have Tom Rowe answer that question because he's in charge of that division.
Mr. Chairman, are you talking the BG and IDE documents?
Both that and if there's a similar system or criteria in place so that when you look at these things, if a GEMS or a GB90 comes in and it looks, I mean, if it's a big amount or if we have an agency that continues to do a certain number of them, Are there things that we have in our system that would catch those and flag those so they can be looked at more in depth to see if there's something going on there?
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the caveats of the accounting system is that it assumes the user knows what he's doing. And that can get you into trouble. But the BGE-90E documents, those all go through the budget office. So the budget office is going to say yay or nay to that transaction. And I'm not sure whether they're tracking those by agency or by frequency. That might be a question for Brett. The GEM documents, there's a process in place right now to still have the budget office and the governor's office approve any GEM document that the Department of Education processes with respect to the 100 series. And that process is still in place. There's no other approval process for our office or the budget office with respect to GEMs.
Chairman, I was just talking in general. I'm just wondering as we look at our, because to me it's an internal control question, and we look at those things and just. So I guess from your answer, other than the part of education, there's not. Is that what I'm hearing?
There's, Mr. Chairman, there's not. Only within the agencies they have if an agency, say, GQ processes a jam, whoever enters that transaction, typically they have additional approval levels within their own agency. Somebody else is going to be approving that transaction within the agency.
Do we know, Mr. Chairman, if I can follow up one more? So ultimately, when that, isn't that approval, is that followed up on by A&I, or is that followed up on by the Division of Audit? Or does anybody follow up on those, on the approvals?
Mr. Chairman, I know that our external auditors, they ask for every GEM transaction that is processed during a fiscal year, and they look at them all, and then they make their samples from those transactions and then get the supporting documentation from the user agency as to why they did the GEM. And surprisingly, a lot of the GEMs are for de minimis amounts. I mean, you'd be surprised. They're 10 cents, 20 cents, a dollar kind of deal. Obviously, there's others that are larger than that, but there's a lot of them that are for de minimis amounts. They're just trying to true up their budget with respect to either they got it in the wrong budget fiscal year or in the wrong org within the budget fiscal year. So they're just truing it up.
Okay. Any other questions? Brett, I think, has some for us.
Mr. Chairman, just in response to some of the questions from Senator Perkins and a couple clarifications, if I might. Specifically with respect to GEMs, the other purpose that I'm familiar with for those being utilized is to maximize the application of federal dollars. So it's not just necessarily a correction of errors that occur within the system, although I think that is a predominant reason for utilizing them. But I think many times agencies, if they get a determination, for instance, from a federal agency that a particular expense is not eligible for reimbursement, you might see the expenditure actually GEMed to be able to maximize and essentially recover all of that federal, those federal dollars that potentially would reimburse for costs. So sometimes I think you see the GEM used in that regard. Specifically with BGE90Es, Senator, there's no actual trigger of volume either by number of transactions or dollar amount that would necessarily have us automatically go in and conduct a more comprehensive review. There are some restrictions in terms of our review of the BGE90Es that we look at. The BGE90E is utilized to implement B11s. Specifically, and those are required when it moves across a division, moves across an appropriation. Within the appropriation itself, there are some limitations. Obviously, folks can't move their 100 series out of their 100 series. There's a limitation on the 400 series and the 300 series as well, 400 being ETS. So without ETS approval, we're not going to see any spending authority moved out of the 400 series. The 300 series is cost allocation, which is something that our division is responsible for. So there are some internal guidelines we use in terms of our review of those BGE90Es, but there is not necessarily a trigger with respect to either quantity or of either the dollars affected or the number of transactions.
Okay. Any other questions? I think we've about wrapped your agency up, Madam Auditor. Appreciate your appearance here today. We don't expect you to be here on callback, so Merry Christmas.
Very good. Merry Christmas to all of you as well.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, members, so tomorrow at 8 o'clock, we'll recess till 8. There's another meeting going on upstairs, Select Accountability. I think there's a couple members.